buddies, welcome to the Crew 3 Podcast. Most recommended, as always, are my co-hosts Chris and Ricky. Jump and say hello.
Hey.
What up?
And that is the fastest podcast intro in the West, boys. It's Thunder Junction time.
There it is. Welcome back, Ruckman. We needed our fearless leader back. We needed the heart and soul of the podcast back here, bringing back the energy, bringing back the cowboy hat. You know,
We got the cowboy. We're rocking for the video because the video will be back this week. I got the cowboy hat rocking. We robbed the vault. We got the Infinity Gauntlet up here. We got Godzilla with the Ricky Tatial trophy over there. We got the loot. Unfortunately, the movers also got the loot because I'm missing things.
So
we can no longer wager Ruckman's War of the Spark because it's all gone.
It's all gone.
I can still wager it.
It's like all the War of the Spark Planeswalkers, and it got banned, you know?
Yeah. So you guys have been doing great. I have to say, I'm glad to finally be back because there's a story I've been waiting to tell on the podcast.
Oh, break it down for us.
So luckily, we finally got to move down to our first floor apartment, right? So we were excited to be on the first floor after third floor living, the struggle of third floor living, right? Only stairs. But we're like right up against a bunch of the like greenery and stuff like that, like the plants. So there's this bunch of just like mulch and stuff like that by our little patio area. So Marilee was like, hey, I'm going to go to Home Depot and get the little like plastic things you can kind of put down to stop so that when it rains, all that mud and stuff just doesn't like wash into our patio.
Right.
And so our patio is not just covered in mud. So she's out at Home Depot, like in the outdoor section, like the garden section, just looking all over the place for the little things that she's looking for, anything to use for it. And she looks like 10 minutes, can't find anything. So she stops an employee and is like explaining what she wants. And the guy just goes, well, if you use your imagination, anything can be what you want it to be. She's like, no, this is what I need. He's like, well, you know, if you really think hard enough, I'm sure you can find something that you could use. And he keeps pointing his head. He's like, if you think hard enough and use your imagination. And then after for like a few minutes of this, she's just like, all right, well, I guess I'll keep looking then. Thanks. The guy leaves and it's right behind him.
Well, there we go. He's there the whole time.
He was there the whole time. Just need to look. Just need to use her imagination to think a little harder.
It's like, well, I would have punched that man. I'm sorry. Absolutely. Just would have lost it to be like, what are you talking about? Like,
I wish I was there. The fact that he left and she was like, he was just standing right in front of it the whole time. I'm like,
right.
That's magical.
That's true. It's almost like he made it appear behind him almost.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a guardian angel over there. Yeah.
Should have captured him. He was the loot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Who's that not Chris Angel magician?
David Blaine.
No. Somebody who's more relevant.
There's nobody more relevant than David Blaine.
Oh, yeah.
That's the name of his show. Huh? It's like his name effect is like the name of the show he does.
I don't know. I only know David Blaine.
It's literally just Practical Jokers, except it's a magician man instead of like four, numbskulls and their friends, you know?
It's no what the F David Blaine.
Oh my God.
Cheez-Its.
I would just put my car down.
That's right. That's right.
I would just shop at Walmart.
Yeah.
That's true.
Speaking of loot, what do you think of Magic's new Digimon?
Love it.
I think it's adorable.
I think it's adorable, yeah. I'm for it.
I don't understand how that's the best one.
It's not the best one, it's just adorable.
Sure.
He's the connector of worlds, Ricky.
The cornucopia is the best one.
Oh my gosh. We have so many names for that, none of which we can say on this podcast. That may be the worst mythic I've ever seen in my life.
It just goes to show that someone in Magic was like, oh my gosh, Yu-Gi-Oh! With all these hard once it turns, genius. I'll put it on everything. Which is what I feel about a lot of cards in this set. Where I'm like, oh, this does something. Hard once per turn. Well, never mind. I'm off it now.
The problem is that like somebody clearly designed that card as like a common, right?
Sure.
Like, with the once per turn rule. And then somebody else was like, we need more cards. you know, like we got to put these cards in these slots for this thing. And like, so it's not anybody's fault. Cause like the person, the poor person who designed that card was like, the last time I touched that card, it was a common, I promise. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I have nothing to do with this abomination of mythic rare that is right here. So like,
just at least, you know, at least they're uncommon, right? Like,
I feel like every single big scorecard should have been spoiled at 3 a.m. Because at 3 a.m., those are the best Magic cards you've ever seen. Yeah,
right. You must be lonely.
Next morning, oh, man.
Yeah.
What was I on? Why are there like 37 unwinding clocks in my TCG card, you know?
The great Mason Clark LSV debate of whether or not new GTA is good or garbage.
Everybody is just literally just, this is either the best or worst card.
Yeah.
And it will never be okay. I just love
Mason Clark being like, oh, and you could get it with Saga. And then like the tweet right under LSV just, and don't even get me with the Cope of Urza's Saga.
Right. Yeah. There's the wild takes in the Wild West set, you know?
We're here this week. Like I said, it's the start of metagame boot. Like we said last week, it's the start of metagame boot camp. So this week we're going to kind of wrap up with the requested spoilers. We'll have some stragglers next week, I'm sure, because I think the set's almost
done.
Whole set's out. So next week we'll probably kind of talk about some highlights for patrons. Expect the next week our usual top 10 episode. So we have to look out for that.
Commander cards. We still have like 80 commander cards to be spoiled. You know,
yeah. Well, we got to fill those collector packs with something.
Right.
But this week, though, like I said, Metagame Bootcamp, this week is going to be, we're going to cover about essentially the top 8 or 10 decks, the format that you should know going into RCQ season. Now, of course, Thunder Junction will be legal essentially the very start of the season, so things could change. I don't necessarily think we're going to see that drastic of a shakeup. I do think we'll see some decks with some new toys. So, and again, it'll take people a little bit to get new cards. So this will kind of get you started in really thinking about the format, because I don't think anything's going to drastically change, but you at least know the deck list and how to sort of combat them since the point of this week. And then next week, we've been taking all of your questions about the metagame and how to sort of get ready for SQ season. We'll be answering those next week. So let's get started with spoilers, shall we?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Our first one is going to be Smuggler's Surprise, a spree spell for a single green instant. For +2 mana, you can mill 4 cards. You may put it to 2 creature and or land cards from among them onto the battle, or milled, or, sorry, from among them into your hand. Let me move this here. For +4 and a green, you may put up to 2 target creature cards from your hand on the battlefield. And then for +1 mana, you creatures you control with power 4 or greater gain hexproof indestructible until end of turn.
Here's one of them, their commander cards you were talking about.
So we got a Grizzly Salvage, we got a big reanimate, or we get a little heroic intervention.
This is a very exciting Primeval Titan card. Mm-hmm. So all formats for Primeval Titan is legal. All one of them. This is for you.
This is an instant. I mean, this is interesting, right? Like, mm-hmm. You big mana stuff, you do big thing, put big creature on field. So, sure.
Like, you know, 6 mana, it's the bad half of Tooth and Nail.
Right.
And like, that's for 7 mana, it's a bad Tooth and Nail where your opponent can't kill your guys this turn.
Yep.
That's kind of cool.
It's Tooth and Nail.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's a bad Tooth and Nail, but hey, we didn't have any Tooth and Nail, so I'll take it.
Well, not an instant speed at least.
Yeah. You're not seeing this in like rug creativity, anything like that? Nope. No, nothing. Not doing it for you. All right. Well, how about Worse Electrolyze?
Worse Electrolyze?
Are you talking about Slick Sequence?
Slick Sequence, Ricky. Why don't you know what Slick Sequence is?
Slick Sequence is red, blue, instant to deal 2 damage to any target. If you've cast another spell this turn, draw a card. This card's going to be very good in Standard.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And
Pioneer.
Probably not in Pioneer.
Yeah,
we
can't jam this with our new Bird Wizard friend.
The thing is that Prismari Command isn't the best, but it does multiple jobs decently enough.
Okay.
And Izzet Charm isn't the best, but we've decided that collectively we would rather have artifact destroying capabilities on Prismari Command than play Izzet Charm, which might be wrong. We might need to go back to the Izzet Charm.
Mm-hmm. Go back.
I just think there's two spells in front of this one, you know?
Sure.
You know, like it's that old grandma from the Geico commercial. She's like, six collars ahead of us, Jimmy. It's like that. There's like five blue-red instants ahead of this card, unfortunately, that all fill the same exact spot of like kill something, but also value.
My hope for this card is in a deck that doesn't really exist right now, but could soon, and that's Izzet Prowess, because we're going to want some ways to go upstairs in addition to Wizard's Lightning. Mm-hmm. And this can help us refill our hand. You know, it's a cantrip, right? We're like, we always want to be just going face. Like, we don't want the counterspell option of Izzet Charm, because otherwise, I think you're right. I think that Izzet Charm is just the better card with the option to sometimes counterspell stuff. So, again, probably not Pioneer playable, but I could see it in that deck in particular, where we're doing this any target means it's going face, right? Because we're trying to kill opponent dead. So...
All right, what do we got next? We got a copy of Forsaken Miner. For single black, you get a 2/2 rogue skeleton. Forsaken Miner can't block. If you commit a crime, you may pay black. If you do, return it from your graveyard to the battlefield. Seems like a great combo with Priest of Forgotten Gods.
Yeah, dude.
It's just good. Like, this is better than the raid guy.
Yeah. Action 2 Shields Jackson.
Like, this is like... early aggression, and then when we Thought Seize or Fatal Push, we get to pay one extra to buy him back.
Mm-hmm.
I like this guy a lot. This guy is, this is my kind of skeleton, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it turns even like a late game Thought Seize, that's kind of like little to no value into just getting a guy back.
Multiple guys if you have multiple in your yard too, so.
Sure, yeah.
The janky combo potential here is with Insidious Roots. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Boom. It's strong enough as it is, and then it brings some plants with it.
All right.
You just want to put Insidious Roots in everything.
You know I do. Yeah. You know I do.
All right. What about Zor over here, Ricky? Or a Reckless Lackey for a single red. You get a 1/2 first strike haste goblin pirate with 2 and a red, sacrifice Reckless Lackey, draw a card, and create a treasure token.
I'm glad you asked, because this is a 1-mana pirate with a lot of words on it, one of them being haste.
Uh-huh.
So this is going directly in my Pirate Commander deck, which I curate pretty often. It'll be an all-star there. And I don't know where anybody else is going to play this card, but I'm going to enjoy this. Sometimes they make cards that are literal only for me, and this is one of them. Everybody else, you can enjoy looking at it in your box, but it's only for me. Sorry.
You don't think this guy's going to be like limited playable or anything like that? Like, you're not going to draft this guy?
I might draft this guy. First Strike is kind of cool,
yeah.
But we're not talking much about limited right now.
Blocks Ragavan.
Yeah.
This card is cool and limited. However, I feel like this format's going to get way bigger, way faster.
Sure.
And 3 mana to cash this guy back out for a card in my mana back is kind of rough.
Yeah.
He doesn't even commit a crime.
But Ricky, and he's the king of hell.
There's a card that destroys all first strikers.
Is there?
There is a combat trick in this set that gives your guy +1/+0 and first strike, and all your opponent's creatures lose first strike and double strike.
How did I miss that? What?
It's called Quick Draw. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you're right. The fastest gun. Nobody else.
Sure. All right. Fair enough. Moving on to Assimilation Aegis, 1 blue-white for an equipment artifact. When Assimilation Aegis enters the battlefield, exile to 1 target creature until Assimilation Aegis leaves the battlefield. Whenever Assimilation Aegis becomes attached to a creature, for as long as Assimilation Aegis remains attached to it, that creature becomes a copy of a creature card, exile to Assimilation Aegis, equipped for 2. So we have a movable clone effect, but it's a copy of something we O-ringed?
So you can O-ring your opponent's Arcfiend of the Dross and then never equip this card.
Yes.
Or equip it anyways.
Your opponent's creatures.
Now we have a Shieldred.
Yeah. Yeah, now I'm the Shieldred.
Yeah, we're playing Blue Eye Control, right? Where we make our Samurai into a Shieldred.
Ooh. I think this card's really good, actually. It's just It's a O-ring that could be a little abusable because it's an artifact, which is nice. Uh-huh. And it's equipped. Yeah. And then it just randomly lets us gain some extra value if we exiled something kind of weird with our opponent. Or yeah, like,
I mean, theoretically, we exile our opponent's best guy. So, like, right. I'm not telling you this card is that good, but you know, theoretically, we get our opponent's best guy, and then we make one of our guys that. Like, I don't know, there could be something there.
Like getting to turn our tokens we make off Castle Vantress or off mm-hmm. of Wandering Emperor into Vein Rippers.
Yeah,
it's kind of sick, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, for as long as it stays there, all my stuff. I think the problem you see these days is like there are just so many answers. So like every time I see a cool artifact or enchantment, I'm just like, well, that would be cool, except Baseju is a land, you know, that channels right. to blow up artifacts and enchantments. So like you can't get too cute with it, but this card being a good value, you know, a value removal spell, there could be something there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right,
sideboard of like blue white artifacts type deck, sure. something like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean we saw a little bit of those decks bounce around every now and then. All right, Magebane Lizard, one in a red for a 1/4 lizard. Whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Magebane Lizard deals damage to that player equal to the number of non-creature spells they've cast this turn.
This card's not real.
This card can't hurt you?
They didn't print this card. Actually, you can't open it in booster packs. It's a set booster exclusive. It was a mistake. Funny joke. April Fools. You can't open or play this card. Don't do it. Don't hurt
this
me.
This is going on the sideboard of every deck I play against Ricky for the rest of time, you know?
Well, Ricky, you at least think of a new removal spell to kill it. It's a 1/4.
You can't play it in the Phoenix sideboard because it hurts you too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ricky, you really have to want it more than your opponent is all I'm saying.
That's right.
This card is dangerous.
All right, Pillage the Bog, black green for a sorcery. Look at the top X cards of your library. Where X is twice the number of lands you control. Put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Plot one black green. All right, so this is my chance to talk about plot. I haven't gotten to talk about plot yet. I think right. both of you had some good arguments for plot. Sure. I think that plot is a mechanic where things like the Bird Wizard, where only the really, really good plot cards are going to be playable. And it's gonna be one of those mechanics where it's like, yeah, like you play the two good foretell spells, right? You're gonna play the two good plot cards. Otherwise, you can't play this mechanic at all. At least in Pioneer, the format is way too fast for it. Like Chris was saying last week, right? Like if you're gonna take a turn off to plot a two or plot on like turn two or three, and you can't guarantee that I'm not killing you next turn, like you're just dunskies.
That's right.
I just think that
was like, saying all along.
That's fair. I mean, if you take a card like Pillage the Garbage here, right, sure. which says that for two mana, you get to look at like the top four cards of your deck and put one into your hand at sorcery speed, right? Or yeah. for three mana, you can do it tomorrow, right? Yeah. This card's terrible just in general. It could have plot like zero, and this card would be like unplayable, man. Like,
yeah.
Not sure. Plot zero would be very good. But this card is pretty bad, in my opinion. Like, Impulse is just better than this card, right? Like, almost always.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to highlight the fact that, like, plot is one of those mechanics where the good cards with the mechanic vastly outshine the other cards with the mechanic.
The worst card with the mechanic, yes.
So, and you know, I that's what all I'm trying to say with the mechanic is that, like, yes. Right. The good cards people are going to think of the good cards and be like, plot is so good and busted. It's like, really, it's like an okay mechanic. It's an interesting mechanic. I'll give you that. Like the layaway, cast them free later. I like what Ricky's talking about, where you just put the bird out there, right? And now you get to threaten your opponent not be able to tap out at any point in the game, right? I think they're good mind games with it. But at the same time, you also can't afford to take turns off in a lot of cases as well. So it's going to be a mixed bag of a mechanic for me.
This next card, however, makes plot seem real interesting.
Why don't you talk about it, Chris?
The next card we've got to talk about here is, I'm going to say this is Lila. Lila, the undefeated Slickshot. Never been defeated ever in the history of time. It's a one colorless, blue, red, 3/3 legendary creature, human rogue. It's got prowess. And whenever you cast a multicolored instant or sorcery spell from your hand only, exile that spell instead of putting it into your graveyard as it resolves. If you do, it becomes plotted. So we give all of our multicolored instant or sorceries rebound, basically.
Yeah.
Except, obviously, we had to cast them. So they don't rebound and rebound and rebound, unfortunately. But, you know, I don't know. That's pretty interesting, you know? Like, there's a lot of modal spells that I think are good. Obviously, this isn't the most insane with Spree cards, which I think are going to become pretty popular. I think Spree is the better mechanic from the set over Plot, to be honest with you.
I also saw people talking about this in, like, Niv to Light, and I don't think this is a Niv to Light card at all.
This card is going to be amazing in my multicolored cube.
Yeah, it is.
But I think this card is not interesting at all in anything else. What instants and sorceries are you casting that are multicolored?
But Ricky, it has multicolored cards, and Niv to Light plays multicolored instants and sorceries.
Whoa!
Mind freak!
Vanishing Verse, and the next turn I can Vanishing Verse after I played this blue-red 3-drop that does nothing.
Yeah.
It's got prowess, you know?
Cool.
We get to, all right. Now, here is, I think, a good one for conversation.
Let's see.
Caustic, I might have to stop you.
Uh-oh.
I'm interjecting a card.
Okay, go ahead.
I have to stop us on an interesting card that our viewers did not pick up on.
Okay.
Rakdos Joins Up.
The reanimate?
Oh.
This is a Chris card to the extreme. I can't believe Chris didn't bring it up.
It is a Chris card, yeah.
Okay. This is red, black, 3. For a legendary enchantment, when Rakdos Joins Up enters the battlefield, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with 2 additional 1/1 counters on it. Whenever a legendary creature you control dies, Rakdos Joins Up deals damage equal to that creature's power to target opponent. So this goes infinite in Standard and in Pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
With one of Chris's favorite cards, Abuelo's Awakening.
Wait,
do you know this?
I missed this. Explain this to me. How does this work?
So you cast Abuelo's Awakening. It doesn't matter what X is. Make Rakdos Joins Up come back into play as a 1/1 legendary enchantment creature.
Okay.
It will trigger, which will reanimate a creature. Any clone reanimates at this point. That clone will come into play as a copy of the creature Rakdos Joins Up. It will trigger and then die to the legendary rule, which will then reanimate itself and continuously loop Rakdos Joins Ups, dealing 1 damage each time to your opponent.
Wait, how do you reanimate Rakdos Joins Up, though?
So Rakdos Joins Up is going to be a creature with Abuelo's Awakening.
Yeah.
And it clones.
So you sack the new copy, which is a clone, but when it came into play... So this is a body double thing. We have to have 2 clones in the yard to loop this?
Just one.
Just one.
Well, when it comes into play, it has to target.
The trigger on the stack of Rakdos Awakening will not resolve before you legendary rule the clone into the clone graveyard.
Back into your graveyard.
It reanimates
the clone itself.
Yeah.
So it can reanimate itself?
Reanimates the clone, yes. The clone continuously reanimates itself.
Wild.
Yeah.
What does that
mean? This is finally something that you can do that's really neat with Abuelo's Awakening.
Fair enough. And I guess the die trigger, it's still a legendary, so does it die and deal damage to our opponent?
Yes.
Yeah.
It does. Okay.
We can just throw Yargle and Multani.
Yeah. I've seen that.
That's basic, right?
This is
a 1-card combo with 2 cards in the yard, right?
Yep.
We just have to cast a 4-mana sorcery that reanimates. Chris loves this.
Chris does love it.
All right. So can I talk about the Bronco now?
Move on.
All right, Cost the Bronco. 1 and a black for a 2/2 snake horse mount. When Cost the Bronco attacks, reveal the top card of your library and put it into your hand. You lose life equal to that card's mana value if Cost the Bronco isn't saddled. Otherwise, each part loses that much life. Saddle 3. The alternate name of the podcast you're originally getting started.
That's right. Saddle 3 is going to be the offshoot podcast we make.
That's Crew 3 After Dark is Saddle 3.
Crew 3 After
Saddle
Dark 3, is going to be Saddle 3. That's where I can make this next joke, which is this is O.J. Simpson's favorite card, you know?
Oh, man.
It's
the Bronco.
It wasn't his Bronco, though.
That's right.
Well, that's why it's so caustic.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So people like really hype on this card. I don't think people miss the text that says you have to attack with this guy who has no sort of evasion or anything like that. And is just a 2/2. So it's a Bob that we have to get in the battle. We have to swing with that. Again, It's going to get blocked by anything.
What possibly in Pioneer will deal 2 damage for 1 mana? Nothing. Checkmate, Atheist.
Checkmate.
Why is Saddle a sorcery? Why do I get blown out by this ability?
There's a Twitter thread about this that I didn't bother to read because I didn't think they're just like, oh, it's weird if you can saddle an instant. And I was like, all right, so there's some kind of reason behind it. I'm not interested in
I think my favorite that. Twitter thread I saw recently was like the one about the card with crew 1 that makes a treasure when it attacks everything that's crewed it. And someone didn't understand that you could crew multiple times.
No, it says you can't crew it multiple times. So you had to commit all you aboard the pain train at the beginning of your turn.
But they didn't understand that it worked. They just thought like, oh, we can't. They didn't realize you could over crew.
Yeah.
What do you think of Caustic Bronco? I mean, yeah, right?
I think the card's pretty bad. I've seen so many 2-mana 2/2s in black that are going to try to Bob. And honestly, Bob probably could be printed.
I think this shows we could just get Bob, right? Like
no one would even play it. Like, it's just not good anymore. It's just unfortunate. I would play
it. Put it right to the veil on the shelf of just cards that don't cost anything anymore and are bad.
Right. Like, we could bring back Snapcaster and it would not hurt.
I sort of want Snapcaster, but we could definitely bring back Goyf.
We literally have a 3-mana Snapcaster in this set.
It's not great, though.
Nope. Neither would Snapcaster.
I think Snapcaster's still way better.
All right, continuing on. What's our next card?
Our next card is Pitiless Carnage, 3 and a black for sorcery. Sacrifice any opponents you control. Draw that many cards. Plot 1 black.
Oh, this card, also known as like one of the best cards for making bad decisions in Magic the Gathering. This and the bird from MKM are just like the most unfortunate misclicks in your life, right? Like
which bird from MKM?
The one that's like, you can give any number of permanents to your opponent.
Oh, that one, like, yeah.
Take all of my cards. And then,
this is one of those that, like, you want to keep tabs on because it might do something broken in the future, you know?
Well, like, then famously, Aaron Forsyth tweeted about, Aaron Forsyth tweeted about losing an MKM Limited match because their opponent played Thassa's Oracle and then with the trigger on the stack flipped up the bird and gave Aaron Forsyth every single permanent that wasn't Thassa's Oracle, causing them to draw like 12 cards and then actually win from the Thassa's Oracle trigger.
Cute.
Whoa.
Because welcome to the list.
Welcome to the list. One of those things where like you play the card that like brings back all artifacts that were put into the graveyard this turn or something like that, and you'll do something maybe kind of dumb with it, maybe, you know, who knows?
Right.
All right.
Commander, you foretell this, right?
Yeah.
And are you, sorry, you plot this, right?
Plot it, yeah.
And then on turn 4, you cast this for 0, floating your mana, sack all your permanents, draw a bunch of cards, and then cast Armageddon, and then you don't, you solve Commander forever because nobody wants to play with you.
All right, we got Demonic Ruckus, 1 and a red for an aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature is +1/+1. It has Menace and Trample. When Demonic Ruckus is put into a grave with the battlefield, draw a card, plot red. You be careful, opponent. I'm going to cause a ruckus.
Ruckus is fine in your future.
Ruckus is, exactly. This card's, this is a decent one, right? I like this in limited because you have like a turn 1 play now that you just lay away this card for later.
I like it.
This is a heroic card, right?
Yeah, maybe.
No.
Yeah.
Too expensive.
It's free. It's one mana. It's 1 mana.
It's a sorcery speed card and it doesn't draw us a card. I don't think it's worth the risk.
It
does draw us a card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Attrition matchup, this is great.
I could be in.
This is one of those things where like, although Monstrous Rage is like better card, this is one of those things where like, should you be in the market for like, hey, I'm having to play an attrition matchup, those usually aren't good for you, so maybe this isn't worth sideboarding to just try and face a matchup that's just not going to be that great. But should you need to, this replaces itself.
Well, this is good because like you can turn 1 if we don't have Swift Spear or Poplight, right? If we have a hand that is just like Virtuoso or Legionnaire, for sure. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm trying to load up on a Virtuoso. This is like the way to do it. This is like a more combo potential, you know?
Card's good. Ricky, I have a quick question for you, Ricky. Obviously, we're all here for the Jason Vraska ship back on the train, right? How do you feel about the newfound friendship between Rakdos and Tiny Bones?
That's fine. I wasn't into Tiny Bones until I saw the trailer and I saw him, I saw him put himself back together and then unlock things.
I really enjoyed Tiny Bones, like, having to climb through the laser maze by just throwing his head and letting his bones scatter across the floor.
I believe Tiny Bones was also, hidden inside of Oko's feathers.
Yeah.
So he could unlock Oko from jail later.
Tiny Bones is just a dead child, right? Like, we don't want to talk about that.
He's just the best member of the crew, right? So who cares?
All right. Next up, we have the real spoiler of the season. Ornery Tumblewag, Tuna Green for a Brushwag mount, 2/2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. Ornery Tumblewag attacks while saddled. No number of 1/1 counters on target creature. Saddle 2. What do you think of just saddle in general here versus vehicles and crew? Right? Like I like that because they're still creatures, you can still do things with them, but obviously they're do more if you saddle them up.
So this card is just nuts and limited anyways. Like, we don't have to saddle anything. Just a 3-mana 2/2 that's going to put a 1/1 counter on something immediately after you play it, and then also every turn thereafter is just insane.
Sure.
And then if we want to, like, saddle up and double some 1/1 counters, like, that's gravy.
Yeah. We want to saddle up our boys and draw a hard line.
Right. Whiskey. Listen, for my men.
I was told to be wary of false idols, you know? Uh-huh. And that's what Ornery Tumblewag just might be. This isn't the real Almighty Brushwag, okay? Now, here's the only thing, is if we make our regular Brushwag larger, and it could saddle this Brushwag, right? And then we've got a Brushwag riding a Brushwag, and maybe that's...
So, unfortunately, at sorcery speed, right, we can't do it the first turn of combat, but Ornery Tumblewag can give its first counter to the Brushwag, so that next combat, we crew the ornery Tumblewag with the Almighty Brushwag.
There we go.
This is going to be a stream we have to do, right? Now we have to try this.
That's exactly right. We need wags on wags. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be the cutest thing ever. There's going to be a little Brushwag riding this Brushwag, and maybe that could be worth it. But I see them trying to trick me. This is a Brushwag. It's got +1/+1 counters on it. Somebody out there specifically was like, we need Chris to play some card from this set. And this slots right into Hardened Scales, and it's a wag. He won't be able to resist. So whoever out there is trying to kill me by poisoning the copies of cards of this that I'm going to buy and or open, it's not going to work. I see right through your scheme, okay?
Okay. All right, next up we have One Last Job. 2 and a white sorcery spree card with +2 return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield, +1 return target mount or vehicle card from your graveyard to the battlefield, or +1 return target aura or equipment from your graveyard to the battlefield attached to a creature you control. Chris?
Give me 1 second.
Yeah, dog. His response is yeah, dog. My response is, that's 5 mana for a t-shirt, you know?
Yeah.
Normally, limited edition. Let's do some simple edition, right?
Can't buy back Godfarer's Gift. So Chris has to be out.
It can't buy back my love. You know, it can't buy back my respect. 5 mana return a creature is all I keep reading, right?
Yeah.
And 4 mana to buy back a smuggler's copter is not the world I live in, you know?
No.
It's a no from me, dog.
Yeah. My love doesn't cost a thing, and turns out this is providing even less.
Woo, that's a rough one.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
I want to quickly talk about.
I want to read Chris's lips real quick. Let's see if we can listen in. And
I got to talk about the most value that you could ever have in this set.
Okay.
I want to talk about Hollow Marauder.
Hollow Marauder. Okay.
Now, this card is a lot of words, and it's an uncommon. It is a 7-mana 4/2 Spectre Rogue Flying. It costs one less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. Right.
Okay.
When it enters the battlefield, any number of target opponents each discards a card. For each of those opponents who didn't discard a card with mana value of 4 or greater, draw a card. Now,
this one, yeah.
I know you're doing your calculus to figure out what this card actually does, right?
Yeah, Ricky, I had to retake Cal 3 like 4 times, so...
Yeah, well, here's the nightmare. This is the ghost of Calculus 5, right?
Uh-huh.
But essentially, if your opponent discards anything that isn't, like, 4 mana...
Okay.
And we're drawing a card. Also, we have Beanstalk in this deck, so when we cast this guy for 2 mana...
Sure.
We draw a card, right? This guy's going to be like a 4/2 flyer for 2 mana that draws us a card off Beanstalk. Then our opponent discards a card. And then we draw another card. Like this, can you follow me?
Yeah, I'm following you. I'm following you, camera guy.
Yeah. Like, this is Mr. Christmas, you know? This is Father Christmas on his ghost train. And I'm down to follow him, you know?
Look, I've been warned not to go on that long black train, though, so I think I'm out. Right.
You got to ask your mom's permission, your father's permission.
Wait, I also want to talk about a card
that
people didn't ask about, but I think I have to weigh in on, with Dust Animus.
Dust Animus. This card?
What?
This is another 3 a.m. card, where this is the best card you've ever read in your life.
Yep.
And then you read it again, and you're just like, card is...
So Dust Animus, 1W for a 2/3 Spirit with Flying. If you control 5 or more untapped lands, Dust Animus enters the battlefield with 2/1/1 counters on it and a lifelink counter. Plot 1W. So.
Well, are you telling me that on turn 2, I can spend 2 mana and on turn 3, I get a 4/5 flying lifelinker for free?
No.
What?
So you need 5 or more untapped lands, Ricky.
What?
So, okay. I definitely will be messing around as a 2/2 in spirits, because here's the thing, right? Rattle Chains still let you play this at flash.
Okay.
So like it's still like something you could do late game, right? Like you plot it, like I'm not gonna plot it on turn 2, right? But if we're spirits and we got extra mana lying around, like we could put this on layaway, and then at some point we just flash it in for free. And then we counter some stuff. I don't know. I don't think this is very great, but it is interesting just that Rattle Chains lets us cast it off of plot at instant speed still.
Are you sure? Doesn't the restriction, you don't think the restriction overrides what Rattle Chain says?
As a sorcery on a later turn.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe. I think it could.
Rattle Chains is bad because
they have flash.
I think the Dust Man is going to kick butts in limited.
Yeah.
And your opponent is going to like suspend it on turn 2 and smile. And then they're going to play it on turn 3 and try to put all these counters on it. And you're going to go, no. It's just a 2/3 flyer.
Yeah.
You know, I think that card's a little, it's weird because it's not that complicated of a card.
Sure.
But I think what people expect it to do is not what it does.
No, for sure. I just look. If I can play it at flash with Rattle Chains, like I think you can, it's going to be fun.
It's still bad, but it's okay.
It's not great. What do you think about the plot dragon, though?
The plot dragon?
Yeah, Stingerback Terror, 2RR for a 7/7 flying trample. Stingerback Terror gets -1/-1 for each card in your hand with plot 2 and a red.
I'm going to say notoriously in limited.
Yeah.
And just in Magic in general. Uh-huh. Cards that are bad for cards being in your hand aren't good, with like literal one exception ever in like all of Magic.
Really? Like even if we're playing this guy as like a 4/4 flyer?
Maybe in limited as like a 4/4 flyer, but then like now you don't want to draw cards. I don't know. This card could be good.
Nate and I are going to be out here trying hollow one, so that's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I don't know, gang. I don't know about that
one. Right. All right. Let's get back to what people want now that Chris is back. Moving on to Claim Jumper, 2W. It's a 3/3 with Vigilance. When Claim Jumper is the battlefield, if an opponent controls more lands than you, you may search your library for a Plains card and put it on the battlefield tapped. Then if an opponent controls more lands than you, repeat this process once. If you search your library this way, shuffle.
Wow, gee.
It sure is the Knight of the White Orchid that lets us find more than a basic twice.
If you're losing, lose a little less. And if you're still losing, you can lose a little less. I'm going to say not good.
Okay.
I think this card has potential with the new bounce land. Like, if we're trying to Eldrazi people, like, you maybe have a chance, you know?
That's what people, I think, are saying, right? Is trying to play this guy on turn three off of just two lands.
Yep. Sure.
Right. But that only works if you're on the draw. And sure. You don't get two lands out of it, you just get one.
Yeah, and people play Knight of the White Orchid for just the one. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is great if you can do it for three, but I'm not afraid of doing this for a rampant growth type situation, you know?
I'm pretty afraid. I don't like playing subpar cards that get me one land if I'm losing.
All right, well, I got a question for Chris, and that's, is Phantom Interference an upgrade for creativity? So we got a single blue here, for instance, with Spree for +3 mana, create a 2/2 white spirit creature token with flying, or +1 counter target spell its controller pays 2.
Yeah.
So for 4 mana, we can make a spirit. For 2 mana, we have a little bit of a quench action here.
Yeah, this is almost certainly an upgrade, right? The only thing is that obviously, like with Casualty 2, you can like get a little more value on your counterspell, but you're usually playing this early in order to make disappear early in order to not die, right? Like get sure. a little tempo because you're a turn 4, turn 5 combo deck. So the ability here to like, hey, later I can guarantee, like I can also make myself more stuff for creativity, I definitely think is an upgrade. We're already playing the make disappear, so this is just like, you know, you probably are at your critical mass of like game objects to sacrifice, so you may not need it, but you know.
Sure.
I mean, this is strictly better in spirits too, right? It's an option.
It is an option. I mean, spirits is now just only really just playing.
It does make just a spirit.
No more lies.
It does make a spirit.
It does make a spirit. All right, seize the spoils. Tuna blue for a sorcery. The spell costs 1 less to cast. Sorry, seize the secrets. Costs 1 less to cast. You cast a crime this turn. Draw 2 cards. It's our divination. Cool.
The problem is, I'm not done playing with quick study.
Yeah.
If this had come out before quick study, I tell you this is like amazing, super cool. I'm super in on it. Like, wow, look at this 2-mana divination. If I cast Thoughtseize, right? Finally, one for the boys, right?
Is this for blue-black? Is this for, like, Dimir control?
Yeah. I don't know who else wants this, right?
Yeah.
But then, like, Quick Study came along, and I'm like, you know what? Divination can just be an instant, and that's good enough. It doesn't need to cost less.
True. Goldvein Hydra, exit a green for a 0/0 Hydra Vigil Trample Haste. And as the battlefield X1 counters on it when it dies, create a number of tap token treasure tokens equal to its power. We get to make our next big spell bigger.
So thank God it's when it dies.
Yeah, and not when it enters because it's a green.
Not when it leaves, right?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I can counter this one.
Yeah.
You couldn't counter Mistcutter Hydra.
Sure.
Mistcutter Hydra does not see play.
Yeah.
And I think it should sometimes. You know, I honestly think that Mistcutter Hydra is a card, but I think that big green mana decks aren't seeing a lot of play right now.
Yeah.
And I think that could change in this set. I think we could see Pioneer have like a mono green come back. There's a couple of cards in this set, I think, that are like really going to help mono green.
The stupid token dinosaur.
That card's really cool, right?
Yeah.
This is like a couple of the random cards I kind of think are exciting to a mono green world. I think
it's just like when eventually you get to the point where you're playing, it's going to be big enough that like it's making a lot of treasure, right? It's like, we already have the mana anyway to do like whatever we want, and it's like, so we need to find creatures with activated ability to start really sinking that mana into. It's weird. I just like, we already have a lot of mana. What do we need a lot of mana double for?
As I said, I think that this could see some potential play in a revitalized mono green build, but I think the real exciting card that we're getting for mono green in this set is the Vault Hydra or Vault Tyrant.
Yeah.
So that's what I think about this card, is that it's cool, it's exciting, it's flashy. Mistcutter might be better. I don't know if we care about the treasure as much as we care about Pro Blue and Uncounterable.
Yeah. All right, Chris, I know you and Nate were talking about, what is it, Highway Robbery with Flags to Trocare, but does this one in a red sorcery, you may discard a card or sacrifice a land to draw 2 cards, plot 1 and 2 do anything in Pioneer, we don't have Flags and Strokecare.
Yes, I think this is potentially my favorite plot card of the set. Just because, like, we're talking about, hey, you know, you may just tap out and do plot stuff and die, but this is for, like, a Phoenix deck where, like, you either, you know, are just casting interaction the first couple turns, if at all possible, or if your opponent isn't, maybe you fire off a couple spells to try and sculpt your hand a little bit better. But, like, generally speaking, if there's a deck that, or a couple of decks that want to just kind of do nothing on turn two, it's because they're trying to, like, kind of set up a later turn for a really powerful turn, and that's obviously either going to be a Phoenix deck or a prowess deck that's going to be killing you kind of all in one. So I think this card's super interesting. Whether or not it'll see play is kind of tough. Obviously, I think most of the time you're going to be discarding a card. And I think the only reason this card's interesting is because you can cast it later for free for a key thing. But the thing is, like, Phoenix wasn't struggling to get its Phoenixes back anyway, you know? So, like, that's kind of the main drawback to this card. It's just like, well, you know, in the thing where we can't really plot, because we're dying, Phoenix has the upside of just being able to cast interactive spells and then casting a bunch of one mana stuff later. So it's hard to say. Like, I don't know that we're casting this much in the sacrifice a land mode as much as we're like, oh, we want a free spell to combo off later. That's where I see this card being interesting. I'm going to love this because it goes in my 1,000-year storm deck.
Oh, no.
Copy spells off, you know? But I'm not sure that anybody else should really care. Just in that, you know, again, it's really interesting, right? Free spells are usually broken, but the fact that you actually have to pay for this one up front, I think, is a super balanced way to cast free spells, and maybe even too balanced, you know, maybe sure. Even not good enough, at least for Pioneer. So,
yeah. Any thoughts, Ricky?
This card's interesting. Like, Demand Answers was like a better Tormenting Voice, like Tormenting Voice where we could sack an artifact, right? And Tormenting Voice, but we can sacrifice a land and also we can prepay for it. Mm-hmm. Is also interesting, but I don't know how good this is. It might be insane, but doesn't seem insane to me.
Sure. All right, moving on real quick here. We got the last few spoilers here. Pest Control, white, black for a search, destroy all non-land permanents with mana value, one or less, cycling 2. Why is that the cycle? Because it has to be good when it's late game, right?
Like, I don't know.
Because it's one of the big vault cards, and it needs to be exciting when you open it.
Sure. Memory Vessel. Yeah, exactly.
Red. That card's one of the better cards, even though we're not going to talk about it much. It is a Convoke Destroyer if you're in white-black, and pretty nuts.
I don't know why, but just to rub it in, it kills all their clues and their blood tokens also.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, this card, I think this card is kind of egregious. I don't like this card design.
Memory Vessel, 3 red, artifact, tap, exile Memory Vessel. Each player exiles the top 7 cards of their library until next turn. Players may play cards that exile this way. So it's Memory Jar as a sorcery.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Memory Vessel.
It's Memory Jar that locks your opponent out of their next turn. You have Draenith Magistrate.
Oh.
So it says until your next turn, players can't play cards out of their hand.
Uh-huh.
And can only play cards that they've exiled.
Sure.
Draenith Magistrate, for some reason, is not a symmetrical effect. So, yeah, Draenith Magistrate will lock your opponent out of their entire turn. Very funny. I don't know what you do from there, but that sounds good, right?
Yeah. All right. Grand Abolisher, a reprint new to Pioneer. Grand Abolisher, white for a 2/2 human cleric. During your turn, your opponents can't cast spells or activate abilities, artifacts, creatures, or enchantments. I know a lot of people are talking about this with Amalia, and that's all well and good until Amalia blows up the board and your opponent can cast the removal spells again.
It does not matter.
I'm going to tell you right now,
This is probably going to be, if not my number one, my like number two or number three most important card for the set for Pioneer.
Okay. Sure.
Yep. This changes how you have to play against Amalia.
Sure. No, 100%.
If your opponent casts Collected Company during their turn, you could just lose. Mm-hmm. Like, they find Grand Abolisher in the other combo piece and you lose. And, you know, Grand Abolisher is going to make your life hell. It's just going to make your life hell. Randomly, though, you can activate the abilities of lands. So you can Odawara.
Wara, yeah.
But that costs 4 mana. Or sure. 3 mana.
I just think, again, like, I get where you're coming from. And as someone who's played them all, like, I also, like, I get it, right? At the same time, I'm also a realist and realize that, like, this really only shuts down counter spells. And again, once Amalia's done blowing up the world, this guy is most likely still in the bin. And our Amalia is now eating a fatal push.
Do you not understand that you're going to gain like 78 life and stack the top card of your deck to be the insta-win button?
That's where I think this card could shine. That's where I think that, like, you're right. I don't think that's lost on anybody. Your creature's probably still going to die, but it does protect your combo, and I think there's some value there, you know? I think there's some value in, like I said, gaining life just to survive long enough, right? Or whatever else, right? It does make your thing a slog, and like I said, if you get to leave the, you know, 4-mana artifact on top, then, you know, you're still probably winning the game if you don't get your lands destroyed.
I'm not saying I'm not going to play it. I've already ordered my borderless copy. I've already ordered my commander,
He's
right?
He's trying to keep the price down. He's trying to keep the price down.
I'm telling you that this card is going to change how you have to play the Amalia matchup. It makes Amalia way better. I mean, is Amalia going to be good into control after this card? Still probably not, right? But is Amalia going to be good against a lot of decks where like we've adapted and kind of found ways to get wins, like against Phoenix and like vampires.
Look, Ricky, Amalia's, it's not gonna be a great deck. Don't prep for it. It's not gonna be a great deck, right? I mean, I'm not planning on switching back to it now that everyone knows how to hate on vampires. Like, I, you know, ignore Amalia. The vampire's doing nothing wrong. All right, last one this year. Bristlebud Farmer, 2GG for here's your stupid your 4/5 trample for 5 with double green pips.
I know this card's unplayable because it's a 4-mana 5/5
trample.
With double green pips. It's never playable.
Enters the battlefield, create 2 food tokens. Whenever it attacks, you may sacrifice a food. If you do, mill 3 cards. You may put a permanent card from among them into your hand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing this card.
Tarnation Vista. Tarnation Vista enters the battlefield. Tap as enters, choose a color. Tap add 1 mana of the chosen color. 1 and tap for each color among colored permanents you control. Add 1 mana of that color.
I had to read this card 7 times.
Me too. Yeah.
What does this card do and why?
After the 3rd time I read it, I knew that this card should have been a rare. And after the 7th time, I was like, this can probably be an uncommon. The thing here is that in order to get your mana back, you need 3 monocolored permanents that are different colors. Am I reading that right?
This card only makes 1 color. Enters tapped? Yeah.
It doesn't add mana of any color. For each color, you add a mana of that color. So your maximum mana you can get back this on is 5. And only from monocolored permanents.
Yeah.
So anything you have, like, that makes colors your cards all colors don't even count.
I think this card was better. I think it used to just for every color among permanents you control,
right?
I think so.
And then
people started playing that card, and they're like, oh no,
yeah. They wanted to cancel this card and couldn't. It needed to be printed. So there they go.
All right, last card here, Harvester of Misery, 3 black for a 5/4 Mana Spirit with when it enters the battlefield, other creatures -2/-2 until end of turn, 1 and a black, discard Harvester of Misery, target creatures -2/-2 until end of turn.
I don't think this card's sick.
People were talking Living End, Ricky.
So this card doesn't come from Modern Horizons, so it's not legal in Modern. This card is like upgraded Shriek Maw.
Yeah.
I think this card is Shriek Maw 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Okay.
I don't think this card is bad at all. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that this card fits in where black-red is right now.
Gotcha. One last card.
Where this card does fit in, though, is potentially Quintorious Combo. You already have a similar card, but this card is like, hey, if you want to save it up to get a Board Wrath in, like on a ramp, you can, you know?
Right.
And I don't think they currently have that at 5 mana. So, like, this lets you kill all of Convoke's stuff, like, just by actually casting it, and you cascade past it. So, I think this card is definitely interesting.
Can I talk about 2 cards real quick that I think are hilarious?
Wait, real quick, before you do that, I'm going to preempt you. Lotus Ring, there's a combo with Fervent Champion, and the random Boros Uncommon lets you buy back something when it dies while equipped.
Yes. I want to talk about I love red cards, and we have Heat Shimmer for 2 mana.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Generous Plunderer.
Hold on. I'm getting there.
Okay.
All right. Molten Duplication is just Heat Shimmer for 2 mana. This card, I think, is insane.
Okay.
This card is I don't know how it's broken, but it's going to break somehow.
Which card is this? I can't see it.
Molten Duplication is a big score card. It's a 2-mana red colorless sorcery. Create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. It gains haste and sacrifices at the beginning of the next end step.
Okay.
I think that card's sick. I don't know what to do with it. Number two is Generous Plunderer. This is the funniest card in existence. Because this is like Mage Bane Lizard kills me forever. This kills Nate forever. Generous Plunderer, 2-mana, 2/2 menace human rogue. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may create a treasure token. When you do, target opponent creates a tapped treasure token. Whenever he attacks, deal damage to defending player equal to the number of artifacts they control.
Oh, snap.
Here.
Dockside Extortionist.
Hold this for me.
Bang.
Yeah. This is just funny. If any artifact decks become prominent again, this is just very funny. That's it. This card is hilarious to me.
All right. Is it time to begin boot camp?
Yeah, let's begin.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Hold on one second.
Where were you on that one? Switch hats. Hat switch time.
Hat switch. Hat switch.
How long is this going to stay on for?
The whole time, baby. Look, I'm not going to say, look, nothing should stop you from owning a replica M1 helmet from World War II. But when I wear it on the show, it's now a tax write-off. So thank you, listeners.
Now a tax write-off. I thought that strap went behind your head. You're just going to wear it in front of your head?
No, and then so essentially what this the leather strap is, right? This is the lining strap. But okay. I also have the other strap that is not part of the lining. So I
could got straps really on straps.
And if I wanted to, we could get the chin strap in there. But
okay, here we go.
That's a different strap.
It's for a different podcast.
Ruckman knows from watching the World War II documentary Girls in Panzer exactly how this helmet fits.
Look, those girls survived because that is a special carbon line tank that even though it horrifically flipped over 5 times after taking an HE round in the side, you know, it's fine. We're good. All the girls are okay. All right. So anyway, let's talk boot camp here. All right. We got this week. We're going to cover kind of the main decks to know heading into the format as of right now. Of course, the OTJ on the horizon, things could change. I'm sure we'll talk with some OTJ cards to consider when we look at these deck lists. So I've just kind of gone through and pulled up the deck list in order as they are currently on Goldfish. So this is by play count on percentage on Goldfish. So that's the order we're going to talk about them in. So we're start off, of course, with Rakdos Vampires. For those that don't know, Rakdos Vampires, I should explain, with each deck list, we're going to give you a brief overview of what the deck is, what it does, kind of a general deck list, and then we're going to talk about some ways to beat it, some tips to play it. We're just going to kind of cover the ins and outs of the deck list on a very surface level. If there's a deck list that definitely intrigues you, you want to really kind of go into, you could definitely go find people, go find the Discord for those deck lists and things like that. We're trying to give you a brief overview to get you prepared enough to kind of understand the matchup as you head into it. And you can sort of start taking these tips we give you and take them into your playtesting sessions, getting ready for the RCQ season. So let's get started, like I said, with Rakdos Vampires. Rakdos Vampires is our breakout deck from Pro Tour Chicago. There is a lot of stuff to find on this deck if you have not kept up the format. You can go see it. Really, again, have its brand. We got Pro Tour Chicago. Lots of coverage of this deck list. Essentially, we are taking the Rakdos mid-range Duke good stuff shell, Fail the Mirror Breaker, Thoughts, and Fatal Push, and we are applying a new turn 3 oops I win match determinative combo in a lot of cases. Again, not game determinative, match determinative, but it is a definitely set up to win. So this deck list leverages, again, cheap interaction, cheap threats and things like Blood Tithe Harvester to eventually land a Sorin Imperious Bloodlord on turn 3, and we're going to cheat in a Vein Ripper, which is a big 6/5 flying vampire that is hard to interact with very good abilities. Gentlemen, anything you want to add to kind of talk about this deck list? What are your thoughts?
It's just the best, most efficient removal and interaction spells with one of the best like resource generating cards with like Fable of the Mirror Breaker, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just get to follow it up with this. I go way ahead on turn three with just a 6 mana, 6/5, very difficult to remove creature with a very strong ability. And a planeswalker that's left behind that has very, very relevant abilities still on it.
I think a lot of people don't realize that, especially what makes, I think, Sorin so impressive, besides being able to cheat in Vayne Ripper, right, is the second plus one ability, being able to deal three to any target. That includes the face, and it's a drain three, makes killing very easy out of kind of nowhere, right? Like, you put in one of your cheap vampire, you play one of your cheap vampires, like you play a Dusty Zealot, you have a Blood Tithe Harvester lying around. You can even just run up, tap Mute Vault to activate itself, right? Sorin 3 to the dome, Sorin 3 to something. That's also a Vayne Ripper trigger. It's just very, Sorin is just very powerful, even when you're not putting the Vayne Ripper into play. You also get to cheat in things like Preacher of the Schism, which is, I think, a card that really you can't sleep on. What I like about this deck list, besides like Dusk Legion Zealot, pretty much any permanent you play can realistically and feasibly win the game on its own. Like, there are a lot of cases where even if you play a Blood Tithe Harvester on turn two, and you're playing it's like a control opponent, right? They're not going to want to really commit their Supreme Verdict to blow up a Blood Tithe Harvester. And they're not really going to spend they need to make sure they leave up counter magic for that Sorin Vayne Ripper turn. So you can easily get in for 2 to 3 attacks with a Blood Tithe Harvester before they will even really be obliged to respond. And by that point, that's half their life total. So, I mean, that's what I think this deck is so is, you know, you can sit back. You don't have to commit unless you're going to be discarding for the turn. You can just rely again on the Blood Tithe Harvester and just kind of get in there while you craft your hand, either get around counter magic with Cavern of Souls, or you're just trying to find a way that you can like double spell to do something, one of your big impactful turns.
Yeah, I think that against different decks, you have different game plans. Because like you said, I think against control, they always have to respect your vampire button is what I'm going to call it. Mm-hmm. So a Blood Tithe Harvester is actually a really high impact early play that you want to look to keep because it comes down early. And then you can Thoughtseize after to keep things going, right? Against a lot of other decks, like Blood Tithe is fine. But you'd definitely rather be keeping things like if we're not keeping combo in hand or combo plus Thoughtseize, like you'd really at least want to be settling for like a Fable to try and dig you to those powerful things. But like you said, against control, like your early clock or any kind of later game deck, mid-range deck, that's an early strong clock you can present. Against Phoenix, it doesn't do a lot. Two toughness, unfortunately, is just not going to get it done. Now, you're not going to know that until games 2 and 3, but that plan does change because Blood Tithe Harvester, no bueno against Phoenix. Preacher of the Schism is slightly better because it's got a 4-butt. So like your range of hands, I think, is different against different decks, kind of like as you pointed out, where you want to keep in mind that, like I said, your backup plan is way better against certain decks, like certain cards are just all-stars, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what you want to be keeping in mind is once you know what your opponent's playing, you want to be looking for certain hands. Obviously, always keep Thoughtseize into combo. That's just a really, really strong one. But like you said, so many players are going to be afraid of the Vayne Ripper that you have so many opportunities just beat down with your other cards, you know, until like opponents like realizing, oh wait, I've been got by these other cards and it's too late, you know?
Go ahead, Ricky.
I was going to say one of the big strengths of this deck is that your offensive package is so strong and difficult to kind of interact with, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That your sideboard can generally just be answers.
Yep.
And you see it a lot here. You don't need extra threats. You don't need to change your game plan at all. You just bring in the answers that help out the matchup, right? Control, oh, let's bring in extra Duress, extra Liliana. Like aggro, we're bringing in Path of Peril. We're bringing in, you know, whatever we need to bring in against, you know, the certain aggro deck, right? Graveyard decks, we're bringing in Leyline. Other vampire decks, let's bring in the Blot Out, right?
Yeah, you nailed it. I think, like you said, the big thing is your Thoughtseize is a defensive and an offensive spell. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like if you take some from opponent, great, but you're also like have your own combo to protect. So the deck's just like ultimately flexible. And I think the big thing to learn is again, like against certain decks, like what can you let go and what do you have to answer? Right. Or what are the range of keepable hands? Like my game plan to, you know, constantly threaten combo. Does the combo even matter here? Right. Is my opponent holding up like interaction for my combo and I just need a beat down. Those are the kind of things you think about. But like you said, your plan doesn't change that much. I really like Rakdos Vampires while it remains unbanned, because like it's not like a Phoenix deck where you have to like you really change your plan between main board and sideboard, right? You switch your deck up a lot. And that's true for a lot of these decks. Like you have to really, you know, hedge up on interaction because the deck's going slower. Here, you just switch the interaction package around that you have to best answer your opponent's card. Yeah. So Rakdos Vampires right now feels like it's at the top of the metagame.
Yeah, and I do think that things to consider, though, with this deck list, if you are going to pick it up and play it, this is not for the faint of heart if you dislike mulliganing. You have to be very open to mulliganing this deck list. I can just say, like, from personal experience, be ready to mull the five and not feel bad about it. Like, you just have to be prepared to mulligan with this deck list. You're looking for, essentially, either both your pieces of Vein Ripper or Sorin, or you're looking for, like, one of them plus Fable. And some amount of like relevant interaction, whether that be Thoughtseize or Fatal Push, depending, you know, game one, you're looking for at least one of those. Also, it's not always correct to fire off the Thoughtseize as fast as you have it. You really are saving that Thoughtseize to kind of set up for your big pop-off turn. So if you have the turn three right, feel free to save that for turn two. Like, give your opponent a draw step before you go in on the Thoughtseize, right? Get as much information as possible of while we set up our big turn there.
Yeah, because like as Ricky experienced and a lot of players experienced against Ricky, especially against Phoenix decks, like you fired off on turn one, great. They're going to have like, they're going to look at eight additional cards to find an answer. So like you said, it's not always best to just, and we've talked about this in the podcast before for the really long time listeners out there. We've talked a long time ago when Thoughtseize was in the conversation for like, should it still be in Pioneer? Like, it's not always great to fire it off on turn one, especially when you're a combo deck. If you're trying to protect something that you're doing, you fire it off later. If you're trying to stop your opponent, then you can fire it off early in case you draw multiples or whatever it might be.
All right. So obviously, a lot of people consider Vampires like the boogeyman in the format right now. I still think we can all agree that Izzet Phoenix is probably the best deck still in the format. But the question is, if we're trying to fight back against Rakdos Vampires, what are some tips for the people at home?
If you can counter Sorin, you have to try.
Yeah.
I just the Vein Ripper on turn three is what gets you. I mean, Vein Ripper can still come down on turn six and still get you. But that Sorin turn, don't forget about Sorin. Even if they get the Vein Ripper, you need to get back there and hit that Sorin.
Yeah. One thing I want to advise people with playing against Vein Ripper, that ward is a trigger. So just because you have a creature in play, don't think you're able to pay for the ward cost. Your opponent has like Fatal Push Man up, because if you go to cast the removal spell on Vein Ripper, your opponent can respond and kill your guy before you have to pay the ward cost. So you do have to be cognizant of that thing. You will make sure you don't get got by your only creature getting Fatal Push in response to the Vein Ripper ward trigger.
And the best thing you can do, if at all possible, is like rush them down, right?
Yes.
Like if you can force them to answer you, they don't have time to set up that Vein Ripper. And then like if you look at the thing, it's, you know, some discard spells, some removal, but it's not the heaviest card draw package, right? They can't have all the removal all the time. So like if you just present better threats, sometimes you're just like, oh, you know, what was that, Ricky?
If we all storm Area 51 at the same time,
they can't stop all of us.
Yeah. Exactly right. Sometimes you got to put your arms back in Naruto to run to the finish line. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what it comes down to. So sometimes you'll just find yourself, you know, putting more cards in your opponent on the table because they mulligan for it. And, you know, although you have to respect the Vein Ripper, sometimes you can race your opponent out, right? Like if they're swinging all out, then, you know, they don't play that many creatures. It's definitely like a kind of, hey, maybe they go two into three. Sometimes they're going to be only Vein Ripper on the field. And you're like, all right, well, are you going to attack me? Because, you know, I'm taking six and my creatures aren't dying. I'm swinging back at you. So it definitely depends on the deck that you are. You can try and fight Vein Ripper, but it's difficult when you're getting your hand torn apart, you know? So like your best thing is just think about the range of capable hands your opponent has. Know what you have to counter and what you don't. Like I said, obviously without Vein Ripper, the deck is significantly worse. The pressure package is a lot less good without Vein Ripper. So you are mostly just going to focus on dealing with that Vein Ripper and then be left behind with a slightly worse black mid-range deck. Mm-hmm. And if they shielded you afterwards, then, you know, you're going to be sad. But that's the card that you really have to answer, you know?
All right, let's move on to Izzet Phoenix. Ricky, why don't you talk to us about what Phoenix is, what it does, and how to beat it?
Phoenix is a mid-range aggro tempo deck.
Nice.
That could mean a lot of things. But essentially what it means is that we are going to be kind of hand and yard sculpting to set up a big turn, which involves us casting three instants or sorcery spells, drawing a lot of cards, and then attacking with at least two to three Arclight Phoenixes out of our yard. Hopefully, our big turn also should set us up to have another turn following after to keep kind of the loop going of you answer Phoenix, and then they come right back and attack you for three.
Sure.
We're going to interact with our opponent just enough to keep ourselves in the game, and then make our opponent just be constantly on the back foot and kind of bury them in card advantage with amazing cards like Treasure Cruise to draw back our entire hand after we've played a billion cards. Most lists currently are running Picklock Prankster, Ledger Shredder, and Arclight Phoenix as their only creatures. Picklock Prankster is not really a creature. It's secretly just the best spell in the game, which is, of course, Free the Fae. For two mana at instant speed, we get to flip four cards into our graveyard. We get to take one fairy or instant sorcery card and put it in our hand. We're hoping to knock Arclight Phoenixes into the yard that way. We have ways to get the Arclight Phoenixes out of our hand with things like Lightning Axe, which is also a really good removal spell for one mana, five damage. Also triggering our Ledger Shredder to connive to drop Phoenixes out of our hand. And then with all the cards we're sending to our graveyard, we're going to be casting Galvanic Iterations and Treasure Cruises and maybe even a Temporal Trespass to steal the game. We play 19 lands, which means you're keeping a lot of two landers and having to pick your moment to find your land. A lot of cantrips with four Opt, four Sleight of Hand, and four Consider being stock standard for this deck. So you're going to be making a lot of decisions that don't look like they matter, but that will matter a lot over the course of the game. This is the deck to play if you want to have the most agency and be the reason you lose every game you lose. But on the other side, you're also the reason you win all the games you win.
So what are some like kind of tips people should look out for if they're looking to pick up the deck or kind of understand a little bit better?
You need to play this deck a lot. You need to put time in on the deck. There's a lot of very strange lines. Even I'm still learning from other players who are teaching me things like responding to your own Ledger Shredder trigger to try to find more Phoenixes if you don't have Phoenix in the yard.
Mm.
Like, literally, like, if you trigger your Ledger Shredder, respond to the Ledger Shredder trigger with more cantrips that you have.
Sure.
To increase your odds of finding the Phoenix to discard with the Ledger Shredder trigger.
Sure.
Like, makes sense. Things like that that are just like, you know, 10,000 IQ plays, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was to say, so one thing this Phoenix I feel like kind of revolves around is Phoenix is very not the most transformative sideboard, but I feel like it's one of those decks that definitely shifts its game plan post sideboard in a lot of matches because of just how easily, readily targeted the deck is to graveyard hate.
So right now, because of how, yes, your graveyard is very important, and a lot of people are playing Leyline of the Void as like four ofs in their sideboard right now, especially vampires.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to kind of be ahead of the hate, you know?
Sure.
Shake them haters off. You need to be able to play other threats. And our main other threat is now Crackling Drake and Young Pyromancer.
Mm-hmm.
Also Ashiok Dreamrender for like control matchups where we can just mill out our opponent with an unchecked Ashiok. I've been playing super spicy cards like Jaya. Used to be one of the best cards, still is like a pretty insane card in a lot of matchups. However, she's become less good with like more instants that kill planeswalkers, things like Shieldred's Edict and sure. things like Bitter Triumph becoming more and more normal yeah. in the format.
I feel like there's a lot fewer ways that blow up just a big go wide pyromancer board than there are just to deal with a Jaya on turn five.
Right. But I'm still playing some Jayas. You want to play a lot of, you can switch to the control deck quite often, right?
Mm-hmm.
Against like decks like Amalia or like aggro decks like, Convoke and Heroic, you want to bring in like sweepers, like Anger of the Gods. You want to bring in, cards that help you kind of control the board. And then eventually you're going to get ahead with some big threat, like a Crackling Drake or something, and then win the game from there.
Sure.
And instead of being more of like a tempo aggressive deck, sometimes you need to know when you need to switch to being the control player. That being said, also control plays Rest in Peace normally. So we take out our Phoenixes there too. Like, honestly, it's all about knowing when to play the mind games and shuffle out in the Phoenixes. Keep your opponent guessing, right? Never let them know their next move. And sometimes you just play a 4-mana 3/2 haste flyer with no other text. And that happens, but dang, they do come out and attack Teferi down, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you hedge against Graveyard Hate a lot. I mean, that's one thing that you do. You can't understate that. It's like, if you're not doing that, then you're probably playing most matchups wrong. Like, you are playing a real person. So, like, you do have to understand, like, one thing that shaped my, like, knowledge of, like, how intricate it is, you know, I played round one Phoenix, the Hunter Burton, and my opponent, seeing that I was a Graveyard deck, did not bring in Artifact Hate. Because they were like, oh, I'm playing white cards. He must be playing Rest in Peace. And Phoenix doesn't have great ways to deal with Rest in Peace. But I was reanimating. I reanimated a bunch of stuff while I was playing against them. So they didn't do that thought process of going, wait, what's my opponent doing? You know, they just said, oh, white cards, that's Rest in Peace. Don't do this. And then I, you know, hearsed them out of the game because I don't want to target my own graveyard. I'm reanimating stuff, right? Like, I just want to affect theirs. So I had artifact-based removal, and then game three, they were like, you know, I just won the game based off that. So game three, of course, they shuffled in some abrades, kept them, and we had a battle. But that extra thought process of what's your opponent going to be doing does matter a lot. And most of the times, like I said, I would just hedge and transform into Young Peasy if possible.
Right. The Vampire deck is going to bring in like 4, 5, or 6 graveyard hate pieces, some of which are Leyline of the Void, which you really can't interact with outside of Odawara and Brazen Borrower, which are not great answers for those cards, right? So playing in a way that you don't really need your graveyard is not a bad thing to do. Switching it up, you know?
Yep.
But thankfully, Leyline also has the benefit of not triggering Vein Ripper.
Yes.
When our creatures die. But
yeah. So what do you, if you're matched up against Phoenix, Ricky, what are your recommendations on how to beat down Phoenix players? If you're willing to give that information up on the podcast.
No, absolutely. Like, so you're going to want to, I mean, anything that can pressure their hand, you want to wait a little bit because you want to wait for them to cycle through a couple of their cantrip spells to build a better hand.
Mm-hmm.
Know that your Phoenix opponent is trying to set up a big turn. So because of that, you need to find like kind of sense when they are going to try to go for some big play. That's when you need to like employ your hate pieces, right?
Sure.
Always wait on things like Unlicensed Hearse. Wait until they try to move to combat. The most important thing you need to exile is the Phoenix. If you like wait and then they cast a Treasure Cruise off the cards and you didn't exile anything, right? That's going to happen. You can't like make that change how you play with Hearse. You just need that Hearse to invalidate the Phoenixes, right?
Sure.
And then, of course, the last thing is in the sideboard, you have to play a guessing game of whether or not the Phoenixes are still there or if they switch to Drakes and be ready, you know?
Sure. All right. Anything else before we move on to our next deck?
Nope.
All right. Let's move on to Abs and Amalia, kind of rounding out. I would hazard to say probably the top 3 decks in the format right now, right? Am I wrong in that?
No, I think you're right.
All right. Our Abs and Amalia combo deck here. This is a creature-based combo deck that also has a secondary, let's say, toolbox engine to it as well, thanks to the fact that it plays 4 copies of Court of Calling. It's a very resilient combo deck as well because it can play the combo also out of the graveyard. They can play multiple copies of Return to the Ranks. So this is a combo deck that you really kind of has all the bases covered. And I feel like Stopping the Combo really comes down to it just kind of faltering on its own because of how many pieces go into and are required for the combo, right? It's not really a combo where they can find it off of one Collect Company, off of one Indomitable Creativity, because usually it requires 3 pieces as opposed to 2. The kind of main key here is that we're playing Wildgrowth Walker and Amalia Benavides Aguirre. Wildgrowth Walker essentially says that when you explore, it gets a 1 encounter and you gain 3 life. And Amalia says, when you gain life, explore. So, and then eventually you sort of loop that, and then Amalia will stop the loop by when she hits 20 power. she exactly had when her 20 exactly 20 power and her ability resolves right. You blow up the world. This is important because if we'll talk about, there are ways of kind of jumping the gun there and forcing into a draw situation. But normally that's not going to happen super often, but it's something to be aware of. And again, and then we're playing cards like Lunark Veteran and what's the other one? Prosperous Innkeeper as our kind of kickstart our combo, right? As off of a Coco or a big Return of the Ranks. So we enter, gain life, we're off the races. Then we're playing cards, like I said, like Court of Calling. We're playing Fauna Shaman to help kind of set up our combo. Fauna Shaman was a recent addition to the decklist post Pertra Chicago. What Fauna Shaman allows us to do is kind of pitch redundant pieces into our graveyard while putting those cards back into our hand off its ability. That way our opponent has to worry about us resolving those creatures on the battlefield or buying them back with the turn of the ranks, kind of blanking removal there. And then, like I said, we have a bit of a toolbox here with Court of Things, the Court of Calling, and that Fauna Shaman. We have to play things like Haywire Might to stop artifacts and enchantments. We get Sentinel of the Nameless City, which gives us a mid-range way to build up explore delays with map tokens. We can play like Skyclave Apparitions. We can play Extraction Specialists. And then usually as a backup plan to if we can't get in there with deal 20 with Amalia, we're usually putting an Aetherflux Reservoir and kind of floating down on top of our library because we have now gained about 100 plus life and are just going to dome our opponent for a good chunk of, what is it, 50 damage? So, yeah, that will usually kill opponents dead. Gentlemen, what do you have to say about Amalia combo here?
Super weird small things that you need to know when playing this deck.
Mm-hmm.
If you can help it, don't play the Scattered Groves and don't play the Takanuma.
Yes.
These are super important lands that almost should not be counted as lands, but as spells. They're important because with Scattered Groves, when you combo off, it'll go into your hand. And you want to use that to draw the Aetherflux Reservoir mid-combo in certain matchups.
Mm-hmm.
So you can keep like digging or use it to pick up an extra Return to the Ranks while you're comboing and then leave the Reservoir on top. So that way you have two different game-ending threats next turn that your opponent can't stop both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Note that like against Vampires, you want to leave that Aetherflux Reservoir on top of the deck.
Yes.
You know? And against like other decks that might be able to like Phoenix and stuff like that that play Ashiok, you're going to want to put that Aetherflux Reservoir into your hand.
Yeah, because Amalia is this toolbox deck, the sideboard is also very one of base, so you can kind of craft it to your heart's content to fit your local metagame. Usually, you're playing cards like Night of Dust Shadow to stop the mirror match. Then you're playing in just additional copies of cards like Sentinel Nameless City to kind of buff up some of our one-ofs that we already have in the main board, but also other hate pieces like Archon of Myria. So the sideboard kind of goes between extra copies of cards we're already playing and then just additional toolbox cards. So sort of think about they're letting you to craft the deck kind of to your heart's content there. Like Ricky said, yeah, Scattergrove is very important on picking up stuff mid-combo. We can also, you know, potentially use it to grab things like a Selfless Savior at before we go to pass the turn to our opponent. That way we can sort of, you know, run a Selfless Savior and leave that there to either help protect our Amalia from ritual rule spells or have Edict Fodder later on. So Scattergrove is a very important card. Very versatile addition to that because the people I think would potentially look over. Chris, you want anything you got to say about Amalia here?
You guys pretty much covered it. I think the big thing you got to realize is like you'll catch players sleeping who are not playing the exile stuff from Phoenix. So, like that matchup is very dependent on whether or not I think it's like Torch the Tower exiles, as well as a couple of things that exile. Cause like otherwise you can just mulligan for your, you know, your bring back cards, whether or not they be, oh, I've got a Takanuma to get stuff back. I've got a Return to the Ranks to get stuff back. So your matchup against Phoenix used to be pretty good. And then they kind of switched over to playing the exile stuff. And I think that's kind of where now you can be in a little bit of trouble. Otherwise, you are a super resilient deck. And this is one of the decks that I do recommend people to play because, again, you just have a lot of ways to answer things, right? So like if people are exiling your yard, that's usually done with an artifact or enchantment. Like you said, you can get Haywire Might. So I like the amount of, I think this is kind of one of those decks that also has a lot of agency to it. given how many things you get to play, you can kind of have a crappy but, you know, serviceable beatdown backup plan. So I do like this deck a lot for what you get out of sideboard options. I definitely think that like green's moved up as far as sideboard options. I don't know that you would play them, but you can play cards like Pick Your Poison. And I still think obviously like white has some of the best sideboard cards in Pioneer. So those are colors that I really like their sideboard options.
I will say there's always the question of when my opponent's going to combo off. What are we killing? Were we killing Wild Growth or are we killing the Amalia, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's definitely also dependent on what you're playing, right? Like more often than not, you're going to want to kill the Amalia.
Yep.
But like my thing as well is, you know, when you have map tokens, when you have things like Sit Out Scout able to come down, sometimes it's better if you're like a beatdown strategy to kill the Wild Growth Walker if you can kind of go off the next turn. Because, I mean, Wild Growth gaining 6 life is just an extra turn off the clock for them to kind of find a way to buy back that Amalia and come back. So I do think it's not always as simple as blowing up the Amalia. Sometimes you have to really evaluate what your game plan is to finish this game out, and you have to kind of make your decisions based on that as well.
But if you're brand new to Pioneer, the answer most of the time is Amalia.
It's Amalia.
The card explores whenever they gain life, which they can do a lot of. So if you're like, oh, they're telling me no, it's not a 50-50. It's just one of those things where if you've played Pioneer, you know that Amalia is the kill an overwhelming majority of the time. But obviously, if the gaining life aspect ruins you, you're probably in trouble anyway because the deck just incidentally gains a lot of life.
Yes,
but Wild Growth Walker can gain them extra life and has a bigger butt.
Yeah.
Right. So there are some things there where like you might take the opportunity to kill it before that gets too big, if need be. But most of the time, obviously, the answer is there. But
also,
it is
keep track of how many Amalias and Wild Growth Walkers you've seen when you're looking at what opponent it could potentially be looking for when they're trying to go off. Right. Like your opponent is putting a bunch of cards in their graveyard and that graveyard is open information. So, you know, be cognizant of how many Return of the Ranks have they milled over? How many Wild Growth Walkers have they milled over? How many Amalias have they milled over? Keep track of kind of what your opponent is able to do throughout the course of the match.
Yep. And then also keep in mind that after they combo, they're usually left with one creature. So, you know, if you're going to edict, maybe seems stupid, but it actually is fine. Although they've gained a lot of life and are probably going to kill you, right? Most of the time you do have to stop that combo because they're leaving a, you know, deal 50 damage card on top of their library. But you can take into consideration that they're going to be left with one creature. And if for some reason they cannot either Flex Reservoir you, you might still have a game. So if it's your only sideboard tool, you know, it is a tool. You're likely dead on the next turn anyway, but consider what you can do with that, I suppose, you know?
I agree.
All right. Let's move on to Lotus Field, a deck that got quite a big upgrade after Markov Manor with Archdruid's Charm. So this is, of course, kind of one of the last great pure combo decks of Pioneer. Like it's a non-creature combo deck for Pioneer, right? It's probably one of the last big ones, if it is the last big one. This deck list is all built around getting a setup of cheating out a copy of Lotus Field or just playing Lotus Field and then making copies of things like Thespian Stage and untapping to make a bunch of big mana. And then we're going to tutor up copies or find copies of things like Emergent Ultimatum to go put our opponent in a quite the bind on what things we're going to cast for free.
Right. I mean, this deck just sort of like combos off with its lands and then casts every spell that they ever want to cast. And then they either kill you through a very convoluted line using Chandra, or thank God we're back on playing just Approach of the Second Sun twice.
Yes. Or you know, we're getting like Zakama and doing other things there, weird things there too.
Right. There's lots of weird ways they can do it after the sideboard, but normally game one, they're going to go find an Approach of the Second Sun out of their sideboard and then use that twice to kill you in the same turn.
Yes. So how are they setting this up? I mean, they have cards like Sylvan Scrying and Archer's Charm to go find their lands to kind of get the job done. Then again, they're using one of the namesake cards of the deck, Hidden Strings, or Cycling of Azir Charm to start cheating out extra mana and then pour over the pages for the big one. And usually once pour resolves, it's not usually game over, but they're in a pretty good situation to end the game kind of then and there. What are your kind of thoughts on playing the deck? What are your thoughts on how to combat the deck, gentlemen?
Normally it's when they get two Thespian stages, or sorry, two Lotus Fields with a Thespian stage. That's when you're kind of done.
Yeah.
I hate this deck. I'm just going to say it right now. I hate this deck. I don't like this deck. I used to play this deck, and it is uninteractive solo mode. Hope that you're not run over. And, man, I dislike it a lot.
Yeah, you kind of got a masterclass on like watching the Pro Tour on how to play this deck and your lines. Cause like Ricky said, it is kind of a, you play with yourself, you know, like you need to figure out when you're dead and make sure that you have to go for it. Cause I've seen a player cast 10 spells and then just somehow like not have the win, you know, like there was some aspect of like what they did or couldn't find the right cards. Cause you know, again, if you're merging ultimatums is like, you basically have to have those to win. So like you can dig all you want, but that's the key card to the deck. So if you can remove that card from their deck, you can do whatever else. Or if you're playing the deck, right, like sometimes you just got to go for it. You think you find it more often than you do, but it is kind of your one card that although you do a lot of digging, you kind of need. So I've seen some decks like hedge with like a main board Dromoka or various things, or do a wish board, right? We're playing Fae of Wishes and get a sweeper out of the board to survive. So those are things you got to think about because like mainly once you learn your lines, that doesn't take too incredibly long, but you got to remember what your options are. You find your relevant cards, cast them and win. And really you got to find the situation that matches the deck you're playing against as far as how fast you have to win, what interaction cards you're playing. But again, this deck isn't like a lot of your cards are wish cards out of the sideboard. So, you know, copy a list, get lots of reps in with it. But at the end of the day, if somebody wants to beat you, they probably can. And that can kind of feel bad because, you know, your opponent may just have Atomic and you may not have an answer, right? You may only have the one bounce spell in the deck or whatever it may be. The good news is like a margin ultimatum does not target. So like there's a lot of random cards like Leyline of Sanctity, Surge of Salvation. There's some sideboard cards that don't actually catch you, which otherwise would be very, very good. And that's a good thing for you. Right. There's not a lot of ways to stop Emergent Ultimatum other than counter spells, but I don't think control is a very good deck right now. Although mono black discard is, I think unfortunately it is a little bit of a rough time to be playing Lotus Field right now. So
right now everybody is on to Lotus Field.
Yep.
Like Phoenix players are now just playing Ashiok.
Yep.
Main deck because it is the only thing you can do to actually beat Lotus Field. Vampires players play Krenko's Buzz Crusher in their sideboard sometimes, but like on the exact opposite side of things, like if you want to play Lotus Field and target a deck in your meta, you can do it, and you'll just beat that matchup like every time, right? Like you want to beat control, just play four Silence.
Yep.
Like you know, you want to beat Phoenix, just play Thought Distortion.
Yep.
You know, you want to beat up on Vampires, you know, you play the Wraths, you know.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to punish decks that want to kind of play mid range by bringing in things like Voyaging Satyr when they take out their removal, and like Dragonlord Dromoka is just a big like middle finger to the whole format sometimes.
Yeah.
Nothing kills that guy.
So you want to be the most disrespectful play Lotus Field?
Yeah, that's how I feel, right? And then like. When you're playing it, like struggle through every play and make it agonizing for you and your opponent. You know, like have it seven ways to Sunday, but like really act like lay it on thick that you're just like, man, I've only played it in FNM before. I don't even know how to, I guess, Hidden Strings, Emergent Ultimatum, I guess, after 5 minutes of tanking. That's what you do. That's how you play this deck. If you want to play against this deck, you play cards like Ashiok. Like, you have to cheese them harder than they cheese you.
Yeah.
I hate this deck. I think this deck...
you hit the go fast button.
Yeah.
Go fast is always a good strategy. You can just go under this deck pretty hard. You can sometimes go over it. Like I said, if you're a Niv deck on your own, you can probably just Niv a Necromancer type effect and get them. So like you are pretty vulnerable, I think, as the Lotus Field deck right now to other things going over you or under you. But again, if you find that right, you know, that right sweet spot there, you know.
Chris, you talk about mono black control, mono black discard. Let's talk about that, shall we? So this is kind of one of the up and coming decks for the last few weeks, mostly based on the fact that, boy, does this have every way to beat Rakdos Vampire, Seven Ways to Sunday.
And it's got also every way to beat every deck.
Yeah. So this deck is we're playing a bunch of like edict effects. We're playing a bunch of it's removal.deck plus discard.deck bumped into one with Waste Not as our kind of value engine. This deck, I think, is obviously very strong, but at the same time, you kind of learn how to play around it to a point where it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, the first Waste Not's pretty good, but it's not really a threat until they get the second one or you're really running out of cards, because I think pretty early on in your game, before like a pseudo lock is established, you can really play around with and not give your opponent the best option with the Waste Not, right? I think one thing this deck does have going for it, though, is the fact that it does get to play cards like Field of Ruin and Demolition Field, where there's very greedy mana bases right now. So you almost start strip mining your opponent and wastelanding your opponent later on. And I honestly think that's the best part of the deck versus just a million edicts and discard effects.
Sunken Citadel into Demo Field is always the best part of the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sunken Citadel does work in this deck, I just want to say.
Sure.
It's pretty big. The big one on this quick is obviously, like, you know, make your opponent discard, kill their stuff. If you're playing the deck, unfortunately, you can just die to aggressive decks, but there's not a ton of those out right now. And your edicts look really, really good against, like, the best aggressive deck, in my opinion, which is Heroic, where you make them sack the guy they've invested all their mana into, right?
Yeah.
Pick one off, pick their worst one off, and then make them sack the other one is your hope, hoping that you have the enough edict effects. Unfortunately, like, if you draw too much of the discard, not enough of the answers, you're dead to an aggressive deck. And if you draw too many of the answers, not enough of the discard, you're dead to some kind of mid-range-y or combo deck. So, like, there are ways for it to go wrong, but this deck has answers against everything. And I do think is one of the – I think this is probably a top three deck right now, maybe a top four.
I think this card –
I think it's right behind like, Phoenix and Vampires.
I think because
– it's kind of weak to one card, like, really particular. And that is your credit card. Because this deck is expensive.
Yeah. Between Shieldred and Alcalax. This is
control, you know?
I mean, if you're looking around a room or you're looking around your local metagame and you're seeing like, man, it's all Phoenix and Vampires, here you go. You spend that credit card money to win an RCQ because you have like Go Blanks are nuts because you play those game one too. You play Edict Effects right against Vampires and your own Shieldreds and stuff. So like you're kind of the mid-rangey deck. You're more mid-rangey and less reliant on the combo piece than the Vampires deck is. You have a bunch of discard for control, other random combo decks, Go Blanks for Phoenix. So again, those don't all line up perfectly every single game, but you know, if you know what the player across from you is playing, because you know what they're known for playing, you have a very big advantage in a lot of matchups. Waste Not or not, you know, I think the deck previously needed those cards to win. Now you're more of a control deck, like you listed here, mono black control with Shieldreds and Alcalots. You know,
The cheapest Shieldred you can buy is non foil Phyrexian. You know, the non English one that doesn't tell you what it does. Mm-hmm. That one is $76. Yep. Jesus,
I've got a foil Phyrexian one.
Sick.
Yeah, like I have two or three Shieldreds.
Don't buy kidneys with it.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. Yep, that's exactly it.
Yeah, I mean, like any other control deck, right, you just kind of got to beat down with it. Like I was saying earlier, you really have to, if you're trying to beat it, really think about what the best option for the Waste Not is for your opponent. And just kind of don't give it to him if you can at all possible. And just, you know, play a basic or two in your mana base.
Play a basic. Put a bird on it, you know?
All right, moving on to Azorius Control, traditional control deck of the format. It's kind of dumping off a little bit, but at the same time, I think the deck has a very good matchup against... there's not really much to describe the deck. It's just your typical just... classic control deck of the format, right? Like you're playing No More Lies and you've got Planeswalkers, you're doing all that kind of stuff. So you think when you think of a control deck, it's a very good Amalia matchup, and that feels like kind of it.
Yep. Unfortunately, you get dumpstered by Phoenix.
Your Amalia matchup is very good, and the rest of your matchups are powered by Cope.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you cannot play this deck unless you believe that this has got a great matchup into Phoenix. It's a great matchup into Vampires. Lotus Field is free. You've never lost to it ever before on Arena Ladder, and you're not going to lose today. You know? That's how you get by in the life of...
I've been telling people for months not to pick up this deck. Hopefully people listened. You just have a myriad of problems. Like, this is one that's gonna be hard to explain. There's a lot of players who can explain to you better how to play it. You've got a lot of downsides, though, right? Like, a lot of the top decks right now have good matchups into you. Your answers aren't as good as Rakdos's answers. Your end game is not as good as Nivtalite's answers, and they have fine mana. You're going to go to time a lot, and then you have a problem with actually winning events that you're playing, especially for new players. People keep seeing people pick it up, and I cannot I've seen a lot of people switch off it. I've seen a lot of people switch off it recently just because I think there's a lot of really talented players that are like, oh, I want to be the control player. Well, then there's probably a better deck for you than blue-white control right now. You know, like, there's more controlling decks, more decks with more options, which I think are more interesting. There's decks with more agency. Your card draw is not even the best in the format, right? Like, you think of control, I'm playing the blue cards. I'm the card draw deck. You're not. You have to have so many answers for all the different things that are out there, and you have plenty of them. Yeah. But you're going to get outdrawn by Phoenix, right? You're going to get out-answered by Rakdos. You're going to get gone over the top of, like, when the opponent tutors a Thought Distortion or whatever they're going to do. You know, like, you waited because you're like, oh, I'm countering that certain spell. And then they just play a different card that gets you. So, you know.
But don't worry. Amalia is unlocked. You're not losing the vampire.
If you want to beat every Amalia player, you know. What's the Ted Lasso meme, you know?
Live.
Yeah, live.
I think that this deck, I enjoy people who play blue-white control. They have the best bad beat stories in between rounds. If they have any time between rounds. You know, it's a
they
ship.
They do once they've dropped from the tournament after going 1-0-5.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a ship powered by hope, cope, yep. And love.
Luckily, you'll be able to commiserate other control players because you'll be playing only against them in the draw bracket after round one.
Yep. It'll be your metagame boot camp. Your metagame boot camp for control is play against the other control players in the draw bracket.
Comes with its own support group, which is kind of nice. Yeah. That being said, God, I hate losing this deck.
Right.
Just because it doesn't have a win con. I think that's the most annoying thing. Its win con is me having a stroke because I can't believe I'm losing this match.
Yeah.
It's 2/2 samurais and 1/1 humans eventually get you.
Yeah.
Are they even playing a manland? They got one haul of the Storm Giants.
One haul. And don't worry, they got that Shark Typhoon and their Sunfall tokens.
Yeah. Sharknado, you know?
You know.
That's what they're getting you.
Their win con is putting more creatures on the board to give them a bigger Sunfall token to end it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. As soon as I sit down against the blue control player, I say, oh, live fire drill. Let me take this helmet off real quick. And
this is for only the players that play with a pen in their ear, tucked between their ear and their ball cap, and a Marlboro in their mouth. Okay. only people that can play this. You've been playing Magic since 1995. You've always played blue-white control, so you can play fast enough to avoid the draws. But if you're not an incredibly fast player, you cannot play this deck.
You telling me this is for the grits and gravies only, the Marcy dice?
Right. Yeah, there was some player who tried to tweet that, like, oh, most of the draws are not the control player's fault, the opponent's fault. That is not the case. Like, I've never played against a control player that was just like, okay, draw, go. It was like, draw, think about my turn to think about your, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a reason that the plays draw a lot. Like, most players are just jamming into it because you always leave mana open on your turn. So, you know?
All right. I think there are
the six pillars of Pioneer.
Yeah, I think there's a couple more, I think, really relevant decklists to talk about. And then I think we can kind of cover some of the, if you feel like we've left out decklists, let us know and we will bring them up at the beginning of next week's show. So kind of, I guess, running through the last few decklists we have real quick. Do you want to talk about Niv, Spirits, Heroic, regular Rakdos mid-range, Creativity? What do you think are the last kind of, let's say, two relevant decks to talk about?
I think Heroic, Creativity, and Heroic. Niv.
No, Heroic is the only aggro deck in the whole world.
I like talking about Heroic.
Okay. We can throw it in there.
And I will just say, spirits players, if you want to talk about spirits next week, don't say anything. I'll do it anyway.
That's exactly right. It's coming. It's coming to a TV near you.
Let's talk about Heroic and let's talk about Niv, and we'll kind of wrap that up for this week. Which one do you want to talk about first, Heroic or Niv?
Heroic.
All right, Ricky, talk to us about Heroic.
Heroic is the only aggressive deck that exists in this world. Heroic plays creatures that normally care about being targeted or casting more spells, and then it plays a bunch of pump spells. We put all our eggs in one basket, and we say that we're going to not tap out and play our Lorian's Escape, and it's all going to be good. But we never drew it, and we're just going in anyways. We're putting our hand on the table, and we're attacking our opponent, you know? We're getting in while the getting's good, and generally going in with one creature, so we really don't care about Vein Ripper, because we're normally just bigger than Vein Ripper.
That's right.
Some lists have been ballsy to cut down to one God's Willing and one Sejiri Shelter. I think this is not the way of the Jedi. But playing some number of God's Willing and Sejiri Shelter let us keep our big guys alive. So that's what I think. This deck is sick.
I think big thing is like a lot of players can be afraid to jam. But especially game one, like a lot of people are thinking more towards Thought Seizes and less so towards like removal. Keep in mind that your Hoplite is kind of immune to red removal. So like he's got his triggered ability says does not take damage. So that's really relevant for like Phoenix, which is all over the place. So the matchup against Phoenix isn't as bad as it would normally be because you have that kind of immunity to red damage with that guy. But unfortunately, if they just keep a handful of red spells, you can be in trouble. But while they're setting up, you can potentially kill them because you can kind of kill out of nowhere. You do enough chip damage early and then just kind of, you know, go at them. So the big thing is don't be afraid to jam that Illuminator Virtuoso because that guy kills if you untap with him. And just that freedom of like, oh, removal check my opponent, right? Did you have it? Like some people are going to look like a dingus when they just go, oh, Fable the Mirror Breaker, and you're like, oh, free win, you know?
You win, because, yep. Game's over.
The guy just kills you immediately. I mean, he's so strong. So, you know, just making people have it, right? The top two decks being interaction heavy is not great for you, but you do have a lot of options and a lot more protection spells that you can play while chipping down and, you know, protecting your guys from, you know, your double strike means you also have first strike. So your combats aren't the worst, right? You can give your guys trample. You've got a lot of really, really strong cards along with just generic strong cards like Monastery Swift Spear. You can play other prowess cards if you want. You've got different ways you can take the sideboard. Most of the decks are playing things to hate out your opponent to give you more time to chip in for the win. But you could theoretically switch your threats out if you want. There's a lot of flexibility, in my opinion, with the white and red cards in the board to like, do I want to play other red creatures or do I want to play more white cards to hate my opponent out? Do I want to get cheeky with Hallowed Moonlights? Do I want to play Surge of Salvations, which are really strong right now? There's a lot of options that I think you have. Well, like Surge doesn't target. It does protect you from Thought Seize and any damage that red and black sources would do. So normally you don't play non-targeted cards, but you have a lot of options is the thought, right? Infinity cards that give your cards protection or indestructible. They've printed 20 of them in the last couple sets, whether it's Lorian's Escape, God's Willing. There's one that protects like an artifact or creature. So you do have a lot of tools to protect your creatures. The only thing is you haven't gotten much of an upgrade in a while, but maybe you do with this new plot enchantment, right? Like it could change the deck a little bit.
Don't be a coward. Run Chance for Glory in your sideboard.
There you go. Take extra turns and kill them, you know?
That card is so sick in this deck.
Yeah, there's some interesting options.
I like this deck. I think I have to like it. It's the only good aggro deck, right?
Yeah.
The new bird is probably going to be pretty good in this deck. I'm having my friends who are new to Pioneer play this deck.
Don't play Fugitive Codebreaker. I forgot how awful the showcase art for that card is. It's so gross. He's so gross looking.
That man, you know, he's the backbone of our society. You know, he's out there breaking the codes, you know?
Yeah.
But don't be a coward. Learn how to jam. Learn how to jam smart and responsibly, right? You know?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Maybe give your buddy your car keys before jamming a little too hard, right? but, you know, have a good time. Have fun. Watch your opponents eyes as they just realize that they're dead.
Yeah.
It's fun. This deck is always fun. Super fun. Good people.
It's also hard to justify playing cards against this deck. Like, if you want to play against it, the best thing you do is have sacrifice effects, right? Shield Lord Zenus are good. Blessed Alliance is a card that I think from a long time ago I used to play that you could play now, but it's not played a lot. But sacrifice effects are the best thing, just because they get around the removal, but they don't always have the protection either. So, like, sometimes what you have to do is on their turn, play the removal spell, and on your turn, play the Fatal Push to get them. So, like, save up two removal spells, make them tap out, and then, you know, when you untap, get them. Also, Path to Peril pretty much always kills the creatures. So, like, you're in a trouble against, like, the Path to Peril heavy decks, against, like, Wrath decks in general, you can be in trouble. So, you know, playing against it, don't be super afraid. It's like, sometimes you can kind of metagame or, like, mind game yourself. Just try and get to your two removal spells, make them tap out, kill their guy, and then build up your own win condition. Because, like, you know, picture this given has death touch. There's a lot of ways you can fight back into a game, make them kind of like, oh, you know, they're creatures and spells. So if they draw too many spells, they don't have enough creatures. They draw too many creatures, their creatures look dumb because they don't have any way to pump them up. So keep in mind, that's kind of their game plan. You kind of hope they fall through a little bit, but any one creature does have the potential to deal you a lot of damage once it becomes the, I don't know what the role that Monstrous Rage does. Is it a monster role?
Monster.
There you go. Once a creature becomes a monster, it's pretty strong. So, but you do have game against it. But the trick is, again, do you want a sideboard? Like, how many slots are you going to devote to, you know, against this deck? I think your main thing is Shieldred's Edict seems pretty good right now against all the decks. And I think there's a lot of cards that incidentally hit Amalia that can also hit you. So, you know, those are things you can be thinking about. If you know you've got a good Boros Heroic player, then, you know, play extra cards. But that's kind of how you're going to beat this deck, is make force them to tap out, see if they have the protection spell or not, and then untap and fire off more removal. They usually go in on one thing, and that's the nice thing. If they're just getting you with prowess effects, hopefully you can beat that, because those guys don't become that big.
Mm-hmm. Never, ever, ever, when you play against this deck, never play your removal spell in combat with them.
Don't
do it unless they are threatening lethal.
Yep.
You make them, they attack, they go attack for three, and you just go, no blocks.
Yep.
Damage. Yep.
Take three.
Take three.
Yeah. Yep. Damage. And then in their end step, you play your removal spells.
Yeah. Right.
So I know Chris really wants to talk about creativity.
You know,
I'm going to give Chris the chance here to talk about creativity, but
appreciate it.
He has to get I'm going to ask him a question.
Oh.
And if he doesn't get it right, we're going to end on Niv.
Okay. Dang it. All right.
All right, Chris. Study. All right. Your question is, what is the name of a country that simultaneously answers both of these questions? How are you feeling? What are you driving?
How are you feeling? And what are you driving?
Yes.
What's a car that's also a feeling?
Hyundai.
Is the answer in English?
It's the name of a country.
It's the name of a country that the English name.
Uh-huh.
You know what? I'm gonna say Mexico, because I think Mexico is a state of mind. You know,
Madagascar.
Madagascar.
Madagascar. How you feeling, Mad? Yeah. Are you driving a gas car?
you're driving Madagascar.
No. How are you feeling, right, Matt?
Good night, everyone. Great episode. It's been a great run.
Yeah, I think I don't know how to feel about
that.
We'll
have to save creativity and Niv for next week.
All right, Chris. Talk about creativity. Talk about creativity.
Creativity.
We'll make the Niv players wait because I don't respect them as people.
There you go. Creativity for a quick hit, I think, is gaining a lot from the newest set. I really like its matchup into Amalia with Torch the Tower. While you don't find those all the time, it's going to be like your primary removal spell, and you can frequently kick it because you're making a lot of nonsense, right? Like, they've now just printed cards ad nauseum that add game objects. Both of the new cards from the new set, I think, are reasonable. There's one that just has you like draw and discard, and then the one that just randomly makes a spirit. I don't know if you'll play all or both of those, but one kind of replaces the casualty card that I was talking about earlier, the 2-mana counter spell.
Make disappear.
Make disappear, and it does the same thing, but also has the upside of potentially making you game objects. So I think creativity gets a lot. I think it's got a couple reasonable matchups. The big question is, what version do you play? because I think you can play the Gear Hulk version, and that makes you multiple like creatures for like against vampires. But I've been thinking a lot about just trying to win the game again or flipping into a Atraxa. Atraxa is just not as good against the edict effects that are going around. So your main choice is, you know, do you want to play Izzet? Do you want to play Rakdos? Your main thing, obviously, you're trying to do is get either a game-winning two creatures into play or a huge tempo shift to your side of the board with either a Gearhulk getting back Magma Opus or just an Atraxa. But you have quite a few flavors of the deck. Again, you've got Izzet creativity, you've got Rakdos creativity. Rakdos is great because you have a proactive and reactive discard spells and Thoughtseize and Duress. You can also, if there's a ton of Phoenix players in the room, there's a one mana card with flashback that exiles a card from a yard and makes you a 2/2 with Decayed. And I play that on Arena Ladder all the time. I absolutely main deck that card. It's not a sideboard card. It also exiles up to one card. So I think even if there's nothing in the yard, I believe you can still play it. And then that gives you Transmog. That version of the deck is a creativity slash transmog into an Atraxa. So it's about how much you think that Atraxa can win you the game or whatever big spell you want. You can also just go into, as you will play a Hornet Queen, whatever that card is, and then also Titan of Industry. But your main things are interacting early with burn spells and counter spells to then play a 4 or 5 mana creativity or transmog into a big tempo swing or a game win if you've got the 5 mana. With how many game objects you might be making soon, it's really just about how reliably can you get the creativity. With Jeskai, like maybe every time if you want to play like janky tutor cards or black cards that can potentially do that now with the case of the Stash Skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different flavors to this deck. And again, how you play it, interact early, then do your tempo shift or win the game. How you're going to beat it is, you know, have a way to beat that Atraxa, right? Have a way to not die to the Gearhulk stuff. Right. Sometimes that Gearhulk stuff just isn't enough if you've built a board in advance. So creativity in its multitude of flavors, I think, has like great ways to attack the metagame, whether or not you're playing against a lot of Phoenix, whether or not you're playing against a lot of Amalia, whatever you might be doing. I think creativity kind of has the answer for it. It's just about whether or not the, you know, if you go all in on the combo, that's a 5 mana combo and you can just get run over because you run out of reactions. Right. You don't have enough answers to people's stuff and then enough catch up because you're playing cards like Deduce. Right, you only play one or two maybe of the big delve spell dig through time. So like you're not just like infinitely drawing cards like Phoenix is. You definitely have a limit to how many cards you're drawing. So I have played in the past and gotten run over by stuff, but you definitely can just win the game with one card by making game objects and creativing them off. So it's a deck that I think is really interesting and really worth considering for this upcoming Pioneer season, especially given that the price of creativity, I think, have gone down. Given that it was like standard season and now I think it's about to be Pioneer season. So modern is what keeps those cards, I think, expensive. And I think they're cheaper than they've ever been. So a really, really interesting deck. I think, again, the big things you want to think of, just like Phoenix, your sideboard cards are like kind of okay. But artifacts do not stop you. You can creativity those off if you need to. So if you need to stop a whatever it might be, Grafdigger's Cage, whatever, right? You can just play an extra one. And creativity that off. That's kind of a Babby's version of playing the deck, learning what, you know, answers don't work against you. But Hallowed Moonlight certainly does. So that's one that's going to get you and Phoenixes. So there's incidental hate against you too, unfortunately. But you know, if you choose to play the back of black version, you can Thoughtseize. If you want to play Jeskai, you can play No More Lies. I think the deck has a lot of legs given the amount of ways that you can play it. So there's like no one for sure way to play it, and there's no one for sure way to answer it. Other than be ready to answer one big threat, even in the full combo version. If you can just Vanishing Verse a World Spine Worm, then your opponent really no longer has ways to win the game. Maybe if they cheek you out with a Shark Typhoon. But you know, if you can answer their one big threat, the problem with the Atraxa version is it's going to refill up. So, you know, hopefully you can kill them by then, I think, is the main thing. What have you guys been experiences here for our last deck to like beat creativity?
I mean, just take the creativity with Thoughtseize.
Creativity with the Thoughtseize is a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one. You can definitely look like a busta if you don't get enough redraws going.
Yeah,
I mean, also one heck of a card. I've beat people with fabling with fable twitches back and forth, having multiple fables on because they're so worried about your combo aspect.
And hopefully they're playing like the bad Magma Opus build, and like I don't care.
That Magma Opus kills bugs dead pretty quick, Ricky.
Don't kill Vader.
I mean, they've got to have a magma opus in their yard, and then they're going to, like, creativity into this, like, big torrential Gear Hulk. Like, there's lots of opportunities to interact with, like, killing the tokens or killing the artifacts or
It's also weaker against, like, the yard, right? That's the big problem with that deck is, like, if you're getting hated against creativity, hate against Phoenix, that hate's good against you, too, because you need the yard for your Gear Hulk to be casting stuff out of, so.
Right. So I think that the Big Worm build is definitely the better build because it can just win against Phoenix.
Yeah.
I think just winning the game is kind of a...
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing right now, I think.
I will say, Chris, you brought something up I forgot to mention when we were talking about vampires, and we were talking about control as well. Hey, vampire, people new to vampires, you don't lose the Hall of Moonlight. Remember that. Sorin is a May. If you activate Sorin and your opponent goes, play Hall of Moonlight, you don't have to put the Vein Ripper into play.
Right. You just say, okay, thank you. Your Sorin's a little worse, but he still exists, so there you go.
Because I can't make you reveal a card in your hand.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't make
but,
you love
but, all, but also, no. If you go... but also, don't if they try to... they also can't trap you, right? Like, you can't go... -3, put Vein Ripper, they go, actually, Hall of Moonlight. Then you go, actually, I'm not going to put this Vein Ripper into play. Like,
right, yeah. Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, don't let them try to be like, no, you said it. You said you're putting it into play, but I'm Hall of Moonlighting. So yeah, so that'll do for this week. Like I said, I know we kind of want to talk about Niv. We want to maybe mention Spirits. If there are any other decklists you guys want to, or listeners at home want to have us mention, please put them in the Meta Bootcamp questions channel on the Discord. Also, I'll be going through and organizing all of those questions that are currently in there and getting those ready for next week. So there is still time to submit them. I would say if you haven't gotten your Meta Bootcamp question in by, let's say, please get them in by Monday at like midnight. That way I can take Tuesday and most of Wednesday to kind of get those organized. That would be great. So yeah, make sure you get those in by, we will say, midnight on the 8th, so we can start organizing those. Yeah, so I think it'll be a lot of fun next week. Thank you for listening to kind of our decklist talk. Again, if you any question metagame relevant about the metagame, how to prep, how to play, things like that, make sure you get those questions. We'll be covering those next week, as well as wrapping up on the last few decklists we have to talk about kind of important of the game, and that is in the Meta Bootcamp question channel on the Discord. I want to say thank you to our Patreon.com/crew3mt crew3mtg. We have several tiers available. All of them do give access to special patron only channels in the Discord, like the Patreon mailbag, where you can ask a question every week that sounds something like this. This question quickly comes from Icewater, who asks, how do you guys tackle playtesting when you don't have a decent sized player group in your area? Bonus question, why in the hell did the Orioles not elevate the number one MLB prospect, Jackson Holliday from AAA? Chris, I think that one's specifically for you.
They know what they're doing. Major League Baseball is all about manipulating service time. The Oakland A's just designated their best player down to AAA in order to hurt that young man's career and make them money. So, you know, unfortunately, they're allowed to do this because they get to act in exclusively their best interests. Hopefully the Players Association will have some things to say about some of these manipulations of service time coming up soon. But I think baseball and football are kind of on the decline, and women's basketball is skyrocketing up in stonks. So
yeah,
get your WNBA tickets now, apparently.
Get the UFL tickets.
Get your tickets to the other things. And I think the best thing you can do is make friends online, right? Make friends in a One Old Crew 3 Discord. For your favorite format. Although I do not like social media sites for meeting people that don't have a face and name, I think they end up being kind of toxic. I think if you can like meet people and introduce yourself, people that you feel comfortable talking with and like, you know, telling them who you are or joining a streamer, right, and watching them. But the best way to learn is by doing, right? Repetition is how you will remember these things as much as like we hope some of these tips will help you. Playing is the best way. So your best way is to play online best of threes, not best of ones. Arena Ladder is fun. I play best of one all the time for my God Pharaoh's gift deck. But you really need to be playing best of three matches against quality competition. Unfortunately, that lacks pretty hard in Arena. It's easier to find on Modo if you're willing to play that client, but hopefully they're making some updates to it. Again, you know, next thing you can do, and it's again, the best part of the game is make friends, you know, make friends online and play to the digital client.
It also has the benefit of actually being Pioneer and not Explorer.
Right.
And having the format available. Yeah.
Being real. So
Spell Table is good. If you have a webcam still, you know, you can join the Crew 3 podcast Discord. You can look for games there, find people that want to play on Spell Table or something. But also go and just check at your LGSs. Most local game stores nowadays have Discord servers. Most local game stores nowadays have like some form of social media presence. So posting on their Facebook or asking questions in their Discord server, you might be able to create the play group you're looking for.
Yeah.
There might be like people that are not actually knowing that they are like, you know, if your LGS does not have Pioneer, you know, Knights or whatever, right? Maybe you could talk to about starting Pioneer Knights. Yeah. There could be enough people interested, but nobody is organizing. And I think it's important to take initiative in your community. If you feel like you don't have a community, maybe you can take small steps that might create a community.
Yeah. I would say also don't be afraid to, like, if you're on like kind of like an outskirt city or something like that, don't be afraid to also look up maybe like Discord groups or stores that are in like the big city in your area. You know, you might not be able to go play with them in person, but similar ways, it's a great way to find people to potentially play with online. And you can maybe go meet up with like once a month for like a big playtesting session, things like that. Like there are options besides just, you know, I think, you know, kind of combining some of these answers is another good way of tackling it, right? You know, maybe people in your area just can't make weekly FNMs, right? Just try to organize even just a, hey, like, let's try out this format like once a month type of play session. There are ways you can kind of help build it. It's slow going, but you can kind of build up a community, right? So yeah. So, and again, so thank you for that wonderful question. I just want to thank you for supporting Patreon. Several tiers available, got a bunch of cool stuff given away. One thing we always love doing, so with OTJ coming out, you can go check out how we debate and yell each other for what are the best cards from the new set and why you should be playing them and why they're all big cards like the Cornucopia, which isn't stupid and definitely isn't a hard once per turn, because my Magic, stop having hard once per turns, please. But yeah, besides that, if you want to support us, but you know, you can't usually do this, like paying for Patreon, like stuff like that, extra, it's a little rough, but you know, you're buying Magic cards, OTJ is coming out. Why don't you go to crew3mtg.com, which will apply our TCG Player affiliate link. And if you buy any cards there after using that link and finish your checkout there, we will get a little bit of a kickback to us. And that is at no extra cost to you. That's just the thanks from TCG Player for knowing that we sent you there to go use their wonderful services there. So thank you for everyone who has been using that code. We've got a lot of support on that code already. And again, that helps keep things on besides just the Patreon channel. Gentlemen, where can people find you on the socials?
You can find me on Twitter at also Steve. And sometimes I am streaming on Twitch, twitch.tv/crew3mtg.
That's it. You can find me on the tweeters at @its_Christmas, and Christmas has no T.
All right. And of course, you can find me at crew3podcast, tweeting about all sorts of things, like how Mover stole my War of the Spark sheet. I don't actually think they stole it. I think they lost it. But here or there. So I no longer have War of the Spark to wager for all my buddies. So help me go support us, use that Crew 3 link so I can buy more War of the Spark. And yeah, and hopefully by the next week's episode, I'll have a more of an office put together. But hey, I'm back this week and that's what matters, baby. And yeah, hopefully video podcasts will be back this week. I keep saying that, but now that I have a desk and an office, it's easier to do. We'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.